Okay. Welcome. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And the clerk call the roll. Let's call.
Here.
Well, why don't we just wait a second then?
If you want to mute.
I thought it was 10 o'clock.
Oh, here she comes. Here she is. It's just a minute
or two before. And here comes the clerk now.
It's not 10 o'clock yet.
She's probably banking all her money from bowling. She's a professional bowler if people don't know it now.
Speaking.
Commissioner Shajian.
Present.
Commissioner Blaine. Commissioner Berg.
Here.
Commissioner Clark.
Here.
Commissioner Cram.
Here.
Commissioner Neely.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Chairman Kruer.
Here.
You have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. And before we get started and I go to staff to announce any changes to today's agenda or the procedures for today's agenda, I'd like to recognize our friend and colleague, Commissioner Akajian, who has a couple comments and a couple of people to introduce. And one more time, on behalf of all the commissioners and the staff and everyone, thank you for setting this up here again at this facility and the bag, with the gift and everything else that you do, and it's you're a hard act to follow when we go to any other city. So, especially your driving of the trolley. So, with that, Commissioner Akajian, what would you?
The staff notes that there were no bags at our table.
Okay. It's on its way.
Mr. Akajian, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always a pleasure to have you folks come to San Luis Obispo, and I hope you find your stay very pleasant. We're willing to go out of our way and be sure you get the red carpet treatment. Again, welcome, Mr. Chair. I want to thank my colleagues, supervisors. It's because of them that we're here today, and because of them and their generosity that we'll be able to entertain you for the next couple of days. With me, since we are in the Board of Supervisors chambers, our Chairman Patterson, I would like to ask him to come forward and greet us.
Thank you, Cacho. Chairman Kruer, members of the Commission and Coastal Commission staff, my name's Jim Patterson. I'm the current chair of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to San Luis Obispo County for your Coastal Commission meeting over the next 3 days. It's certainly important that the Commission get out and see the areas that you often make decisions about, and we're pleased to have you here in San Luis Obispo County. We have 118 miles of coastline in San Luis Obispo. It's very diverse, from the Napomo Dunes in the south to the Monterey Pine Forest and the Elephant Seal beachheads in the north. We have the historic Hearst Castle, which you will be visiting this evening, as well as two historic lighthouses on our coast. Our harbors are homes of both commercial and recreational fishing and boating, and we have viable steelhead streams along our coast. So they are very important resources. We cherish our coastline, and we are grateful to the Commission for their efforts in helping us protect that coastline and reaping the benefits of its environmental, economic, and social values. I want to comment just briefly on a couple of things, one of which will be before you tomorrow on your agenda, but in talking with our planning staff, they have emphasized the relationship that our county planning staff has with the Coastal Commission staff, and they've emphasized the consistency and competency of the Coastal Commission staff and wanted me to pass along their gratitude for the hard work that your staff does in working with our staff to protect our coastal resources. Just last month, on June 24th, the Board of Supervisors unanimously passed the changes in the Fiscalini Ranch portion of our Cambria-San Simeon local coastal program, and thanks to the hard work of Dr. Charles Lester and Jonathan Bishop of your planning staff, we've hopefully completed work on our Estero area plan, which we'll be talking about tomorrow. And just briefly on a personal note, I want to thank the Commission for allowing your staff people to work in the communities in which they live. Specifically, Sarah Christie is my planning commissioner here in the 5th District of San Luis Obispo County, and I assure you that she works as hard here as she does for you. So we're pleased to have her. And even on a more personal note, my son, who's a recent graduate from the Donald Brand School of Environmental Science and Management at UCSB, spent last summer working out of your Ventura office as an intern. So that's a way that we can give back to the commission anyway. It was a valuable experience for him. I called him his first few days in the office, and he's a marine biologist and worked for the foundation that does marine research along our coast. And he said, "Dad, I've spent the last 5 years on a boat in and around the Channel Islands, and now I'm in a cubicle with no windows." And I assured him that it was important that he have this experience, that he knows how the other side of the world works. And in talking with Pat Beesart, who was his supervisor, he did adjust, and it was a very valuable educational experience for him. So I want to emphasize the importance, I think, for that we all know that we need to share, collaborate, cooperate among agencies and jurisdictions. I'm happy as a supervisor of San Luis Obispo County to share our supervisor, Sajian, with the Coastal Commission, and we just need to work cooperatively together wherever we can. So welcome to San Luis Obispo County, and again, thank you for the work that you do in protecting our coast statewide, and particularly here in San Luis Obispo. And I know Supervisor Asajian or Commissioner Asajian has some activities planned for you tonight and tomorrow night along the coast, but please do and do stay and visit our inland areas. We have world-class wineries in the north and south counties, oak-covered woodlands, and three-digit temperatures in the north county that you can all experience while you're here. So welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Kajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's always a special person in our lives that makes us look so good, and that special person in Supervisor Patterson's case happened to be the young lady, Amy. Would you stand up, be recognized? And Supervisor Gibson had a prior commitment, and he wanted to be sure that I'll welcome you on his behalf, and the lady that makes him look is the young lady, Sherry Spiro, with us. She's also be helping us this afternoon. You get to know her better. And, of course, us being in the city of San Luis Obispo, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to welcome Mayor Dave Romero to greet us.
Thank you, Cacho. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mayor of the city of San Luis Obispo, I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to you returning to San Luis Obispo City. You'll note we are one of the few coastal areas not threatening to burn up during this week. And we are one of the few areas in California that still has cool nights and pleasant days. So we think this is our own little piece of paradise. We're very pleased to have you here meeting. We recognize the very important work you've been doing for many, many years, and the protection it provides for all of California. I hope while you're still here that you have a chance to visit our downtown San Luis Obispo. We're very proud of it. If possible, your schedule allows, Thursday night we have the farmer's market here that's recognized all over the state. Block party, 3 blocks long. We close off the streets and have a good time. Friday night we have music in the plaza, if you have a chance to visit that in front of the mission and Mission Plaza itself. And finally, while you're here, I would hope you have a chance to visit the world-famous Madonna Inn. So we have a lot of things that keep you occupied in your spare time. Most importantly, we want to, again, thank you for your visit to San Luis Obispo and your continuing to have your meetings here. We hope this happens on a very regular basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Mayor.
Mr. Chair, on behalf of both of my colleagues, Harry Ovid and Jerry Lentil, I want to welcome you. Unfortunately, they're not able to be here this morning. And now, with no any specific order, I have also invited the mayors and the representatives from the coastal cities and community service districts. Next one on my list is Mayor from Morro Bay, Janice Peters. Maybe next year we'll do it again.
Okay. As some of you may know, Morro Bay is facing some serious financial difficulties, and we recently requested an overall assessment of our city organization by Management Partners Incorporated. We're in the process right now of reviewing and implementing the 38 recommendations that they made for us to maintain our city's viability. I'd like to share with you their number one recommendation because it mentions you. This is the report. Number one says, use this report to lobby the Coastal Commission for an expeditious approval of the city's general plan. The city must explain its grave financial position to the commission and the need for certainty surrounding land use issues in order to attract investment to the community. And I close quote. Our general plan and local coastal plan were submitted to you in 2005, and we're still awaiting their review and return. These plans consolidated and removed a lot of inconsistencies for us. We can't implement them until we get them back, so it is rather frustrating in our development process. I totally understand the workload that your staff and you are under, but I would ask that you could please set a date certain for review of your plans before the end of this year. It would be very much appreciated.
We really appreciate your welcoming comments and everything, but since this isn't agendized, et cetera, we should be careful on proceeding down this road path, or okay. We won't be able to come back and see those whales with you again.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say. It's just a request. Thank you. Enjoy your time here on the Central Coast.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next, Mr. Chair, representing Pismo Beach, and we'll have the... We'll look forward to visiting tomorrow night, Mayor Mary Ann Reese.
Good morning, Chair Kruer and Commissioners. We're very, very pleased that you're here in San Luis Obispo County, and we'd like to welcome you. And we also thank you for all the good work that you have done for us and other coastal communities in San Luis Obispo County. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you. Next, representing Grover Beach is Mr. John Schultz, Mayor John Schultz.
Good morning, Chairman Kruer and members of the Commission. I am Mayor John Schultz from the City of Grover Beach, and on behalf of the City of Grover Beach, we'd like to welcome you to the beautiful Central Coast. As many of you recall, the last time that I addressed the Commission, we were in San Francisco, and I had the pleasure of talking about a success story of our staff working with your staff, and I'm here to report today that relationship continues. We are very glad to be working with the staff, working with you, and preserving our beautiful natural resources. I'd also like to acknowledge Supervisor Asajan, He has been a wonderful representative for our county, our region, and now the state, and we could not be more proud of him. Thank you for coordinating this. We will also be joining the city of Pismo Beach tomorrow and welcoming you into a reception. We know it's going to be hard to live up to the Morro Bay experience, but we will put our best foot forward. Again, thank you so much for your time and the valuable work that you do in protecting our beautiful California coastline. Welcome to San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, representing the Community Service District of Cambria, with us is Joanne Cobin, if I said that last name correctly.
Close enough. Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Carrera and commissioners, staff. I'm sorry, I'm suffering a little bit from the smoke issues we've been suffering from, and it's getting better. Any rate, so I'll be brief. Again, I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the Cambria Community Services District. I know you've all been up there and you've enjoyed time in Cambria. I hope that you have some time to do that this evening when you go to Hearst Castle, and perhaps come to some of our restaurants, walk around town. We've just inaugurated a wonderful historic museum that just we have a house that's in town. So there's lots of things happening there. We're a little town, but we're on the move. So thank you for coming. Thank you for the work you do, and we look forward to your visit again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representing the beautiful Oceano Dunes, Mr. Chair, we have the chairman of the Oceano Community Service District with us, Mr. Jim Hill.
Chairman Carrera and members of the commission, welcome to the County of San Luis Obispo, and representing the southern area of the County of San Luis Obispo Oceano Community Services District. We're very glad to have you here. We face a number of challenges, as do our neighbors, for balancing the environmental impacts and the economic interests of our citizens, being in one of the lower income areas along the coast. We also welcome, in addition to your commission, over 1 million visitors to the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area every year. So our community has many concerns related to the work of your commission. I also want to echo Mayor Scholl's congratulations and recognition for Supervisor Ashajian, the excellent work that he's been doing to help the residents of our community and all of our county. And also like to echo Supervisor Patterson's welcome and his encouragement for you to get out and see the local area here, which is one of the gems, of course, of the state of California. So welcome to all of you, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And from Los Osos Community Service, with us is Chuck Sesenia. Chuck?
Hello, Chairman Kerr and fellow commissioners. My name is Chuck Sesenia. I'm the president of Los Osos Community Services District, and on behalf of the great citizens of Los Osos, I'd like to welcome you here to this most beautiful part of the Central Coast, and thank you for all that you have done to protect the qualities that make this the most beautiful part of California's Central Coast. My 30 years of experience as a public servant have allowed me direct experience at seeing just the diversity and complexity of issues that you deal with. Everything from see-through bridge rails, protection of agricultural land, to pedestrian access to the coast. You have the most diverse and complex set of issues to deal with of any regulatory agency, and I just want to make sure you understand that we thank you for that, being willing to take that on. And I'd like to briefly touch on what an exciting time it is in Los Osos. We're eagerly awaiting this fall's release of the county's draft environmental impact report for our sewer project. Although we are not directly responsible for developing that project, there is a good chance that the project will come back to the community of Los Osos in someday, so we are greatly interested. What's become apparent in watching the development of the technical memorandums is that energy efficiency and sustainability are going to be the key to affordability for this project, for the citizens of Los Osos. And one of the things that's come out of the recent technical memorandums is the importance of an agricultural exchange program for the effluent.
Sir, you can finish up, but we really should not get involved into the project and discussions because it isn't agendized at this point. So
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was on the agenda for today. I guess my main point would be the importance of an agricultural exchange program to help the agricultural communities and the future water supplies and those issues. That's all I want to say, and thank you very much for being here. And I hope you enjoy your few days here.
Thank you. I have a couple more, Mr. Chair, with your permission. The young lady that often meets with me at least once a month to help me revisit my conscience towards the environment, representing EcoSlow, is Ms. Morgan Rafferty.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Thank you again for coming here to San Luis Obispo for a second time. And we enjoyed hosting all of you last year at our office. And unfortunately, your schedule did not allow for that this year, but we'll miss seeing all of you. And I want to thank Commissioner Shajian for allowing me to come and speak to you this morning and thank him for meeting with us and discussing issues of concern to the environmental community each month before your meetings. And we hope that you enjoy your visit to our beautiful community and hope that you're able to spend some time and visit all the beautiful resources that we have here. And we know you're going out to Hearst Castle tonight. I know if you haven't seen that place, it's an incredible place to go visit, and I know you'll enjoy seeing that. And I just want to thank you for all the work that you do to protect all of these resources and to work with us, the environmental community, and to keep these resources protected and so that we can all enjoy these and so that our children can enjoy these in future generations. I want to thank you for all the work that you do.
And thank you. And representing the Coast Keepers, I think I'll embarrass him publicly, call him my friend, Mr. Gordon Hansley.
Oh, keep it.
Commissioners, good morning. Welcome to San Luis Obispo. We're again glad to have you with us, and we hope that you enjoy the amenities that there are. You will have to sign a release that you can't tell folks outside of this area what it's like here. The answer is, yes, it's always foggy. There's no work here.
That's good.
Welcome, and while you are being transported in the trolley, we hope there's seatbelts in that vehicle, and we will be praying for you. Thank you.
I'm glad you made a comment on that, because I was waiting for one of the speakers with these beautiful welcoming remarks, whether it's safe to ride with Cacho in the trolley.
We'll let you know by Friday.
Good.
Mr. Chair, it gives me great pleasure to invite this young lady to welcome us. She's in charge of putting all our little goodies together, and also I would say I hold her accountable for the great tourism we have in our county, which has become our number one industry together with agriculture. I have Johnny Biagini's name, but if there's somebody else from the Bureau, you're welcome to speak as well.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chairman, Commissioner, and thank you, Ashajan, for that wonderful introduction. I'm Johnny Biagini, the Executive Director of the San Luis County Visitors and Conference Bureau. It is my job to shoot people who say those things, not to invite people to come to San Luis County. It is our job, of course, to welcome you and everyone to enjoy all that we have in San Luis Obispo County. Tourism is the number one industry. And if you believe everything you read in the newspaper, it turns out that you're going to be viewing and visiting a lot of our great assets here in the county. And we very much welcome you to do that and hope that you enjoy it as much as we enjoy showing it to you. And as I've always said, this is California's natural escape. And this is the California that people dream about. The wide open spaces, Hearst Castle, the unbelievable Hearst Castle, celebrating its 50th anniversary, open to the public, which you'll see tonight, as well as all of our coastline. It is a fabulous destination, and we so appreciate you coming, and we've welcomed you with some of our fine products here from our wine country, etc. There's nothing that says you can't use that to help you through your meetings. And we are so appreciative of you coming back, and we hope that you'll come back again, because it will take more than one visit to visit everything we have to offer. Thank you again.
Johnny, what we're going to do, those commissioners who are not here, we're going to give their packages to the staff, so Mr. Douglas is happy with you as well.
The staff that works so hard, and we appreciate you too. Thank you.
Mrs. Chair, a couple more, if I may. With us representing the City Chamber of Commerce is Armina Carino.
maybe we should break for lunch. No, I'm just kidding. Keep going.
Welcome. Welcome to our beautiful city. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for our city's Chamber of Commerce. I know our CEO and President of 35 years wishes he could be here today to greet you. He's on a camping trip in Colorado. But welcome to our beautiful city. We are a city chamber, but our over 1,500 members urge us to be concerned, who live throughout and work throughout our county, urge us to be involved in many issues outside of our city, including some work that we've been very proud of in helping to preserve 27 miles of coastline. Something that I know Dave Garth, our Chamber CEO, is especially proud of. Your work as commissioners is so closely tied to what we value at the Chamber, which is our quality of life here. I can attest to what Johnny said, that this California is what people dream of. Where we are, as a former New Yorker, this is certainly better than I could have imagined. So please do, in your time here, enjoy our county, enjoy our city. We have a fantastic downtown, and welcome.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I saved the best for last. The young lady who makes me look good at all times, Ms. Vicki Jensen.
Good morning, commissioners. And I am Supervisor Shajin's assistant, or supermissioner, as we call him. I would like to welcome you this morning. Anything that you feel like you need and we can accommodate, we're happy to be available to you as staff. I wanted to just a couple housekeeping things. There are some restrooms for the commissioners to use right over here to your right. And there's also some snacks and some coffee back in that room back there for you if you need that. I will also come around if you'd like a special flavor coffee. I am happy to go get that for you. So I'm going to come around and take an order if you'd like. And I don't know if I've forgotten anything else, but...
And for the public, we have the restrooms outside.
Public restrooms are right here on the hallway on the left, and there is also a coffee house across the street out the back doors here. So if anyone from the public is looking for something, we have some city maps also out on the table in the lobby if anyone wants to find one of our restaurants downtown, wonderful restaurants and coffee houses. Or if you have any questions at all, we have planning staff, county planning staff, and I think there's some coastal staff out in the lobby also to help you with any directions. So enjoy your stay here, and I don't know if Cacho's promised any whales for tonight, but it'll be a good tour. Thank you.
She's also going to assist us to get to Hearst Castle this afternoon. She'll be one of the drivers. Those of us who are in the audience, we were supposed to take off at 3 o'clock this afternoon, but because our meeting is going to end much earlier than planned for, we're going to take off from Embassy Suites at 3 o'clock sharp. We must leave at 3 o'clock sharp to make it to San Simeon on time so that the folks from the state are ready to help us. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you. You're being very patient with me. I do appreciate that.
No problem. Everyone, very distinguished comments, and we're honored to be upon this presence of all these elected officials, and we appreciate the welcoming comments. And I see our Sarah Christie, the planning commissioner. We didn't bring her up here, but we'll recognize her, too, since she's, you know, I see she's in the audience. So with that, we'll...
Mr. Chair, I apologize. The reason I didn't introduce Ms. Christie because I think Mr. Patterson did, so don't make me look bad here.
It wasn't intended to make you look bad. Nothing can make you look bad.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. And with that, we'll move on to the staff now, and Charlene, and you can announce the changes to today's agenda and the procedures that we'll follow.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Kruger, members of the commission, members of the public. If you wish to address the commission today, we do ask that you fill out a speaker slip. They can be found on the table outside the hearing room. Please put your name and item number on the speaker slip and bring it to the staff table. The chairman will acknowledge you prior to your item being heard. We also ask that all cell phones be turned off while in the hearing room, as well as any other handheld devices. They do interfere with our webcasting. And turning to the agenda changes for today, on page 3 of the agenda, there are no changes. On page 4 of the agenda, item 6A, 506-166 is postponed. Item 6B, 507-370, County of Orange, moved to consent. And item 6C, 507-395, Simcock, moved to consent. On page 5 of the agenda, item 8A, R50520, Hearthside Homes, is postponed. And on page 6 of the agenda, there are no changes. Moving on to item number 3. This is the consent calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There's only one consent calendar item. The conditions are acceptable to the applicant, and we're not aware of any opposition. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Commissioner Clark.
Move approval of the consent calendar. Second.
Moved by Commissioner Clark, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection? Unanimous yes roll call vote on this item. Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the consent calendar.
Thanks.
Next item.
Item number 4 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District. That's the pink cover report that was distributed to you. And it does include both the Los Angeles and Orange County items. This is the list of permit waivers, emergency permits, non-material amendments, and extensions for the South Coast District. There's one regular and 19 de minimis waivers. There's one material amendment, which has not been received, has not received any adverse comments to date. And there are two notices for immaterial permit extensions. The staff has received a letter of objection related to the first one, 50489E2, to the Three Arch Bay CSD. And this was distributed as a separate item to you today. The coastal development permit is for construction of a new storm drain system to replace the existing deteriorated system in the Three Arch Bay community of Laguna Beach. And the staff had circulated the extension notice as a non-material because we did not identify any change circumstances that affect the project's consistency with the Coastal Act. The letter states the objection is to a fee that the Three Arch Bay Community Services District has been collecting for years to pay for this potential upgrade of the storm drain system that is the subject of the permit. And the author is complaining about the length of time the district has been collecting the fee but has failed to actually construct the project. The permit, as approved by the commission, doesn't impose any fee or address a type of fee. Thus, the objection doesn't raise any issues with respect to the commission's approval of the permit. The author should seek resolution of this with the district itself. And pursuant to our regulations, the executive director must report to the commission any objections received within the 10 working day notice period. In this case, the executive director has reviewed the letter and determined it does not identify any change circumstances that affect the project's consistency with the Coastal Act. Therefore, staff recommends that the commission concur with the executive director's determination on this item and approve the entire district director's report.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination on both points mentioned by staff? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
And item 4A is the City of Laguna Beach LCP Amendment number 108A that addresses RV parking and minimum open space requirements on residential lots. Staff is recommending the commission concur with the executive director's determination that the city's request to amend its implementation plan is a minor amendment. I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum. We did receive one letter of objection to this minor amendment determination, and staff's findings are in response to that letter. The proposed amendment establishes a new requirement for property owners to obtain administrative use permits to park or store RVs on residentially zoned lots, including R1, low density, R2, medium density, R3, high density, and RHP, residential hillside protection zone properties. The objection contends that the city approval of the permit for RV parking or storage on a lot designated residential hillside protection should not be administrative because these properties are can contain sensitive habitat or be adjacent to sensitive habitat, and that the permit issuing should not be the administrative permit process. However, every permit that is issued, whether it be the zoning administrator or the city council, must make a finding that the permit they are issuing is consistent with all of the requirements of the local coastal program. Also, the proposed amendment does not change the requirements related to the city's issuance of coastal development permits. It simply adds a new requirement for an administrative use permit where there currently is no such requirement. the proposed landscape open space requirement would apply only to the R1 zones and simply establishes a minimum landscape area requirement for residential development in that zone. Neither change would supersede or replace any requirement for a coastal development permit or, most importantly, change any standards that would apply to the development, including protections afforded by the residential hillside protection zone, which must be taken into consideration in review of any administrative permit or any required coastal development permit. Therefore, the staff continues to recommend the Commission concur with the Executive Director's determination that the LCP amendment can be approved as minor because it does not change the kind, location, density, or intensity of use and is consistent with the certified land use plan. That concludes my comments on this matter.
Any objection to finding concurrence with the Executive Director's determination? Hearing none, the Commission concurs. We'll go to the consent calendar.
Yes, item 5 are those items moved from today's South Coast District, Orange County's regular calendar to the consent calendar. The first item is 6B, 507-370, County of Orange. And item 6C, 507-395, Simcock. If there is anyone in the audience here for these items, they should come forward now.
We have no speaker slips.
Okay. All of the conditions are acceptable on these items. We have no letters of opposition. Therefore, we are recommending that the Commission approve these items on the consent calendar.
Mr. Clark?
Yeah, I move approval of the items on the consent calendar as articulated.
Second. Been moved by Commissioner Clark, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the Commission unanimously approves the consent calendar for the Orange County South Coast District. Now we'll go to 7A.
Yes, next item 7A. Can I have the PowerPoint on this item, please?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum. There's some minor revisions to the findings and additional exhibits, and there's a separate letter of objection. This is a request by Piedmont Cove Homeowners Association in response to an enforcement action to amend the permit for a 5-lot subdivision with a home on each lot on Huntington Harbor, bayward of the intersection of Pacific Coast Highway and Piedmont Circle in Huntington Beach. Am I giving a PowerPoint on this one? As conditions of approval of the subdivision, the Commission required recordation of vertical access from Pacific Coast Highway to the bulkhead property line and an offer to dedicate lateral access over the 5-foot walkway on top of the bulkhead. Well, I'll keep.
Thank you.
this is the end of stuff. Here we go. This is the slide one is the subject site on Huntington Harbor. And slide two shows the vertical access easement that was required by the commission in its previous action through to the bulkhead and the lateral access easement along the bulkhead. I'll deal with the lateral access first. As I said, this is in response to an enforcement action. There are obstructions that exist in the area of the offer to dedicate, which has been accepted by the Coastal Conservancy. You can see these obstructions on slide three. There's a wall and spy equipment that prevent the passage of lateral pedestrian access between the subject property and the property adjacent to the east. The lateral access way to the east is open to the public and connects with the visitor serving commercial area of Peter's Landing located further down coast on Huntington Harbor. This can be shown in slide four. The applicant is proposing to remove the permitted wall and spy equipment out of the accessway. There are some planters on the bayward side of the properties that encroach 2 feet into the lateral access easement, and one planter will be modified to open up continued access from the east, and a minimum 5 foot wide lateral access walkway will be available bayward of the homes. The total length of the accessway in front of these properties is approximately 200 feet. And for most of that distance, a 7 foot wide walkway will eventually and hopefully soon be open to public use as a result of commission action on this amendment. This slide shows the lateral access way bayward of the homes. And another slide of the lateral access that would be open with this, that wall in the distance is what would be removed to open up this lateral access way. And these are the views afforded from the access way. There is an additional area seaward of the easement that's cantilevered 5 foot beyond the bulkhead, and that, in addition to the easement on the subject site, will continually be available for public use and enjoyment. Regarding the vertical access easement, in the area bayward of the vehicular gate to and through the residential lots to the ladder walkway, there is an existing walkway. The next slides will show the path of the vertical easement. The applicant is proposing to revise the actual alignment of the vertical easement in these areas to conform to the existing walkway and area of actual use. This revision to the vertical access easement staff is supporting in its recommendation of approval. And this is the red arrow shows the location of the vertical access way as it extends from Pacific Coast Highway bayward down this driveway and around to where that arrow is pointing is a vertical access that goes between residential units out to the bulkhead that was shown previously. The remaining area of disagreement relates to the vehicular gate, which has been installed across Piedmont Circle, which is the roadway, and encroaches within the vertical access easement. A portion of the gate and the gate control box are located within and completely obstruct the vertical access easement. An unpermitted pedestrian gate that further restricted access to the area has been removed by the applicants. That was located here behind this bush. The amendment request includes retention of the vehicular gate and realignment of the vertical access easement so it shifts to the west and allows the public to pass between the gate and the western property wall to gain access down Piedmont Circle to the lateral access shown in the earlier slides. And this slide shows how the applicant is proposing to shift the vertical access easement so the public could go around this gate between this wall and the gate as the pedestrian vertical access. Staff is recommending denial of retention of the vehicular access gate. There is a land use plan policy that requires existing public access to the shoreline and Huntington Harbor waterways be maintained and enhanced where necessary and feasible, notwithstanding overriding safety, environmental, or privacy issues. This is an area of limited public access to the water, and lateral and vertical public access would be significantly enhanced through the removal of the unpermitted obstructions which deter the public's authorized use of these easement areas. The vehicular gate that's been installed without a coastal development permit is what is visible from PCH. Due to the curve in the roadway, it's difficult to see. There is area available between the property wall and the gate for the public to pass. The gate is a 30-foot wide, 6 to 7 foot high wrought iron gate that spans the entire entry to Piedmont Cove. The applicant maintains the gate is necessary to deter vehicles from pulling into the driveway, only to find there is no parking available and no turnaround area to exit to PCH. The staff recommendation is requiring public access signage clearly visible from PCH to direct the public along the vertical easement area. But due to the imposing nature of the gate, signage alone cannot counteract the powerful impression that this is a gated community. Therefore, staff is recommending denial of this gate and encroachment into the vertical access easement. In addition, the City of Huntington Beach has sent us a staff report for a hearing today on the conditional use permit for this same gate. And the city staff is also recommending denial. The staff report indicates the purpose of the privacy gate is to prohibit vehicles from entering the residential community to search for parking spaces. The paved access does not provide sufficient maneuvering area for a vehicle to turn around if denied access by the gate. This would require the vehicle to back up onto PCH because there's not enough area to turn around. The city cites there's not enough area for two cars to pass if one vehicle is waiting for access to enter. Also, because the entry pin pad is on the gate, a driver needs to exit the vehicle to operate the pin pad, and the unintended vehicle could obstruct access to and from the site. So it doesn't appear that the gate is consistent with city code requirements and may not be permitted by the city through a CUP. The city staff report concludes the vehicular privacy gate may impact the safety of motorists and pedestrians at the intersection of PCH and Piedmont Circle. The privacy gate obstructs circulation through the subdivision and conceals the public access pathway. For all these same reasons, again, staff recommends the commission deny the gate so it can be removed, signage installed, and public access provided at this site. Then alternative options for a means to deter vehicles, if necessary, can be explored with the city and proposed as a future amendment. And that concludes my comments at this time.
Thank you. With that, I'll go to ex parties, starting on my left. No ex parties. Okay, with that, I'll open up the public hearing. Mike Adams. Sir, how much time are you requesting?
Probably 2 or 3 minutes.
3 minutes, sir. It'll be fine.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Coastal Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking on behalf of the Homeowners Association for Piedmont Cove. And as staff has indicated...
Could you state your name for the record,
sir? Oh, Mike Adams, representing the Homeowners Association. This item was first in front of you last May, and at that time the homeowners left the meeting with the impression that there was an opportunity for a compromise, that if they did a number of the points, then there was a possibility the gate could be maintained. They left that meeting, and they've been working on it for about the last year, trying to figure out exactly how to respond in every case. We do have a PowerPoint presentation that's very similar to staff's, if that's available, to go over a couple of the points. But indeed, like staff has indicated, we are in total concurrence with the removal of the spa equipment that was placed there, with a city permit, unfortunately, but without a coastal development permit, and with removal of the wall that is between that particular unit and the seaward side of that wall, and replacing it with a pipe rail consistent with the rest of the project. We are also working with the neighbors to the east, the Bayport project, to remove that wall that is actually on their property, and there is a letter that they will comply with that. upon receipt of a third party picking up the easement, such as the Coastal Conservancy. We would like to remap the right-of-way, the vertical easement around Pacific Coast Highway, as indicated by staff, through the improvements that are in place, which are slightly a bit of a shift from what was recorded originally with the project. But going back to the gate is the main issue. The homeowners are very adamant that the gate needs to be maintained to keep the public from being confused that there would be public parking if they turned into this complex. It's only a 20-foot wide street. It's a sharp dogleg to the left. As soon as you get inside the gate, it ends up in a dead end. There is not a turnaround. The only way to turn around is to go into a driveway apron. If those driveway aprons are occupied by the homeowner's cars, then the individual that came in and now has to back out all the way. Emergency vehicles would have a hard time getting in and out if people were illegally parked in that area. So there's a number of concerns why the gate is appropriate. And I think if you will indulge me for a second, one of the things that we've been talking about with the homeowners is how we can make the gate be more to what the coastal policies are. It doesn't prohibit vehicular control gates. It simply says that vehicular control gates may not have an adverse impact on coastal access. So I think, and that's the one slide I wanted to show from our shot, we have a number of modifications we are proposing to do to that gate to make it more friendly, to get away from the concerns the coastal staff has that the image of the gate alone is enough to deter the public from trying to get in. We will certainly submit a comprehensive sign program with signage at Pacific Coast Highway. One of the other ways, we said, because there is a bend on that little access road, maybe a signage on the stanchion to the gate, which is to the right of the gate itself. The next slide, please. I think it shows it better. If there's a way to advance it, one. The area to the right shows just a support area. Oh, thank you.
Push the F.
Thank you very much. In that area, we can easily put a sign that would say a coastal access sign with an arrow to the left, then, and then the man gate that has already been removed, that stanchion that currently exists will be reduced in size by about half, only trying to protect the motor that's behind it so that it won't be much of a jog to go around that area. One of the other things that we're suggesting is that because it's a light-colored gate, it stands out more. Dark colors seem to recede, so paint the gate a darker color and it will recede. The other thing we're even considering is reducing the height of the gate. Right now it goes from 6 feet on the ends to 7 feet in the middle. We can easily take out 2 feet of that gate in height, so it could go from 4 feet on the ends to 6 feet in the middle and keep the similar kind of design. You can see kind of where the little V cross supports are. That would be the ultimate height of the gate. I think with those things, with a substantial signage program, the gate will in effect disappear in view from Pacific Coast Highway, and it still can be maintained to keep the homeowners, address the homeowners' concerns that they have of people just coming in and getting locked inside and having a chance to prohibit emergency vehicles from accessing the area.
Sir, do you need another minute?
No, I'd be happy to answer any of your questions. I think that's the case for keeping the gate, and hopefully you'll concur with that. There is a representative. One of the homeowners is here this evening, if you'd like to speak with them. But other than that, I'm available for questions.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming. With that, I have no other speaker slips. I'll close the public hearing. Now go back to staff for a staff response.
Thank you, Chairman Kruger. With regard to some of the modifications that the representative has indicated they'd be willing to make, They may be helpful in reducing the visual prominence of this gate, but the real issue is that prominence as viewed from Pacific Coast Highway. And there are other design options, such as maybe a single barred gate or alternatives to a gate at all, such as red curbing, that may be sufficient to meet their goals in deterring vehicles from entering this area. Some of the problems regarding turnaround that they identify, the city has indicated, are a real problem in the area on the street side of the gate because there is not sufficient area for cars to turn around. So that's a safety issue with the gate present. Staff would recommend again that the commission deny this gate as it's been installed without permits, allow the city to act on their conditional use permit, determine if there is some kind of a structure here that would meet everyone's goals, but deal with that as a separate amendment in the future. But at this point, take action on this and conclude the enforcement action that has been ongoing on this property for some time.
Okay. Thank you for that, and I'll come back to the commission. I'll go to Commissioner One, has a couple questions or comments, and then Commissioner Clark for maybe a motion.
Well, looking at it, aside from the fact that it's not consistent with the LCP requirements for access and the fact that even the city doesn't believe that the gate should be allowed for a whole host of reasons, from a public access perspective, I'd like to read something from, I'll point to you for something from one of the homeowners who sent in a letter, who said, "I don't understand why in the world there's consideration to remove the gate. What purpose would anyone have to be there unless they were an owner or invited by an owner, which is the reason for the gate?" I think that says it all as to why the gate should be removed.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Commissioner Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the Commission adopt the staff recommendation to approve in part and deny in part Coastal Development Permit Amendment Number 5-07-385-A1. I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Clark, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. And would you like to speak to your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I think staff has covered it very well. In terms of the last speaker who talked about retaining the vehicular access gate, I think staff is right on point here. There are other design options possible and considerations that need to be vetted through the city and potentially may end up with a separate amendment in the future. And so I recommend support of the motion as proposed.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kajian, anything else?
No, sir, thank you.
Any other my colleagues or commissioners? Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Here, the commission, hearing no objection, the commission hereby approves as conditioned a coastal development permit amendment for the portion of the proposed development regarding removal of the existing block wall within the lateral public access walkway located immediately to the east and adjacent to the subject site, and removal and relocation of the existing spa equipment out of the public access walkway and onto the private yard area, and adopts the findings that are set forth in the staff report. Next item would be 9, enforcement. Enforcement report?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, thank
Peggy,
you.
Peggy, how are
you
today?
Hmm?
How are you today?
Well, and yourself?
Thank you.
Once I get the mic going, I'll be great. I just have a quick enforcement report today to update you on a couple of enforcement matters. Slide 1. Do we have the... Thank you, sorry. This is not... I'm sorry, how do you... I apologize. Okay. In accordance with Section 308.12i of the Coastal Act, I would like to update you on the status of several NOVAs recorded approximately 24 months ago. As you know, this is a requirement of the Coastal Act. The first item is Edwards. It's a violation on a property located in Pacific Shores. The NOVA was recorded on the property November 2nd, 2006. Today, the violation still exists on the property as confirmed by the Wildlife Conservation Board, and the NOVA is still needed. The second matter is Bicknell, which is another violation also arising from the same Pacific Shores area. The NOVA was recorded on this property on July 6, 2006. Recently, a site visit by Fish and Game Warden confirmed the continued presence of the unpermitted development on the property, as well as even more unpermitted development placed there since the time the cease and desist order was issued. The NOVA is still needed, and I would just note parenthetically that the whole package of Pacific Shores cases, we've been working with the Attorneys General to work towards enforcing those orders that were issued by the Commission over the last 2.5 years. In light of the recent action of the dissolution of the Water District up there by LAFCO. Next, I'd like to update you on the status of a permit violation that had occurred at the Bacara Resort and Spa property located in the city of Goleta in Santa Barbara County. This was regarding a recordation of a public access easement. As you may recall, the commission previously had scheduled for a hearing, a notice of violation action and cease and desist order for the April 2008 hearing. The item was postponed at the last minute when it appeared that it was possible we could work out an informal resolution of the violations. We're pleased to report that, in fact, we have been able to do that. The permit violation involved the Bacara Resort failing to follow procedures required by their previously issued CDP to record documents to protect public access rights through the subject property to Haskell's Beach. This slide shows an aerial view of the subject property with the circle and arrow highlighting the location of the access trail in question, the sort of undulating line through the middle of the circle. The Bacara representatives have since complied with staff's request to obtain compliance with the permit and to conform the recorded easement to comply with the permit. The Commission's legal recordation staff completed a thorough review of the documents and worked with the Bacara representatives to make all the necessary revisions. After the executive director's approval, the correct documents were recorded on June 10, 2008. This slide shows an up-close view of the vertical access trail. We're very pleased to see a successful resolution of this violation. I thought I would just briefly show you how important access rights are through the Bacara property at Haskell's Beach and why we get so much public comment on this at hearings. This aerial view shows that the starred location of the subject matter and the nearest other points for public access are shown with stars to the left and right on the property. The star to the east is the nearest coastal access. It's 3.5 miles away at the Coal Point Oil Reserve, and the nearest public beach access to the west is 7 miles away at El Capitan State Beach. Again, we'd like to thank Bacara for their cooperation in resolving this matter. Next, I'd like to report on a recent violation case involving unpermitted grading and construction on the beach in Santa Barbara County. We're pleased to report an early resolution enforcement action. We're not always lucky enough to be able to preclude resource damage before it happens, but here we were able to because we got an early report. We resolved a violation resulting in removal of a unpermitted 10 by 12 foot wide, 6 foot deep steel reinforced concrete and rock barbecue pit on a sandy beach in Santa Barbara. Enforcement action was taken before completion of the project, which avoided significant adverse impacts. This slide shows the sandy beach area where this violation occurred. While investigating citizen reports of unpermitted construction, enforcement staff found ongoing construction on the structure. We verified that there were no coastal development permits either by Commission or Santa Barbara County. This shows the form for the reinforced concrete caissons and the foundation that were being placed. Just hours prior to several thousand pounds of the concrete being poured to create a permanent foundation and caisson reports, enforcement staff issued a field notice of violation to the construction crew and directed the contractor to remove the unpermitted development and contact the commission. The contractor and the property owner complied and removed all unpermitted development within 48 hours. Obviously, addressing violations quickly like this saves both the commission and the party time and effort and costs. And we're not always lucky to be able to do it this quickly, but we were pleased. Apparently, the owner was from out of state and didn't actually know that he had to get a CDP, but he's aware now. And lastly, next, I'd like to report on the Union Pacific Railroad tree cutting. You may recall that this was the subject matter of some public comment last month, and you asked us to look into it and report back. In May, enforcement staff received complaints from the public regarding cutting of mature Monterey cypress trees allegedly with nesting herons and raptors along the old Pacific Coast Highway near Solimar in Ventura County. This picture shows some of the tree's stumps. And this slide shows a before picture. The arrows are showing the trees that were cut down. Staff investigated and discovered that, in fact, 10 trees had been cut in different locations, some as large as 30 inches diameter on the ground. However, staff was unable to determine whether or not there were herons or raptors actually in the trees, and public members were not able to provide any evidence of this. We did contact the Union Pacific Railroad and asked them to stop all tree cutting until proper permits were secured. The staff also contacted Ventura County, who confirmed that the permits had not been secured for the work from the county. The county agreed to work with us to resolve this. Subsequently, we met with the Union Pacific Railroad, Ventura County, and the Public Utilities Commission on site to discuss UPRR's tree trimming program, which was required by the PUC for railroad safety. There are certain rules regarding protection of line of sight and other issues in the future. UPRR agreed to have their biologists survey trees for nesting raptors and herons prior to any tree trimming activities, and they're developing a protocol for doing so. They also agreed to get the proper permits from the county. If trees are found to have nesting raptors or herons, the work will require review and authorization under the coastal development permitting process before the trees were trimmed. And the railroad has agreed to not only resolve this violation, but to put steps in place so that they will get permits in the future. And if the trees are, in fact, serving as nesting habitat for birds, that they will have obtain permits that are conditioned to protect those birds. Slide 18. Finally, I'm happy to resolve the resolution of a case on the North Coast involving the placement and accumulation of trash and other debris adjacent to the Freshwater Lagoon, a Humboldt County park just south of the town of Oreck. Freshwater Lagoon is located adjacent to Highway 101 as it borders the Pacific Ocean and is used for the public for camping, fishing, and boating. You can't see it very well. The slide's kind of blurry, but this shows the property before the cleanup has taken place. There's all sorts of debris and materials that were found all over the property and immediately adjacent to the banks of the Freshwater Lagoon. North Coast Enforcement contacted the property owners, and they indicated their willingness to clean the property and contain stockpiled materials in an appropriate location. This shows the property after the owners have removed debris adjacent to the lagoon and placed it in an appropriate stockpile. This case was opened in May of 2007 and closed in July of 2008 without requiring any formal action by the commission, so we're happy about that. That includes the enforcement report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Commissioner Juan?
On two of them. One on the tree trimming,
mm-hmm.
and not tree trimming. It was not tree trimming. It was cutting down trees.
Tree removal.
Tree removal, right. It's unfortunate there isn't proof because the homeowners at the time, I received all kinds of emails, and they were, or the people in the area, they were besides themselves, and the reason that they were talking about it was the herons. That was their issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to believe that they weren't there. People don't necessarily go out and take proof and do surveys in advance of something happening that they don't know is going to happen. So it's really unfortunate that we can't deal with that as an issue and an impact to the herons, because I firmly believe that they probably were. With that many herons there, with that many people saying that, I got to believe it.
That may be the case. We unfortunately did talk to the community members to see if they had photos or any other evidence that would help us. We didn't have any indications, and the trees are non-native to that area, and so absent some evidence. But the thing that we were excited about is this is a common problem with the railroad because they do tree trimming for sightline protection and for other security reasons, and so we think that getting it fixed in the future would be of a good preventative measure. And not that this is an excuse, but they did think that it was done in error by the contractor, that they weren't supposed to take the trees down, they were supposed to trim them. So hopefully if we work with them, and they have promised us that they will have biologists on site, they will themselves do the analysis as to whether or not they're nesting trees, nesting birds in the trees before the tree trimming is obtained. So.
And I realize there's nothing we can do, but
yeah.
I'm just saying, you wouldn't anticipate homeowners in the area
yeah.
taking pictures to prove something they don't know is going to happen.
It's true.
On the Bacara,
mm-hmm.
we've had lots of people come in front of us at public comment time and talk about, in addition to everything else, that the folks at the Bacara dissuade people from using that. Has that element of the public access issue at the Bacara been resolved? Do they continue have guards there that basically dissuade the public from using the easement?
We believe, and I hate to ever make promises for the future, because that's the kind of violation that is capable of repetition yet evading review. We're hoping that it has been resolved. The more the forms in which the discouragement took place before, which were people in the public access parking lot writing down license plate numbers and the guards on the beach approaching people and asking them what they were doing there. Both of those things have, to our knowledge, ceased. Myself, I've personally been out to the site and experienced when they were there and when they weren't there, and we do feel that it's gotten better, and we have not gotten recent reports. We are continue to be vigilant and try to make sure that there isn't backsliding. There also was at one point a violation involving a sign that purported to restrict public access, and that sign's been taken down. So although we've had a few different problems at the site, we believe that currently things are in compliance. I know this is one that Commissioner Burke had some...
Push the one that says mute, where you can talk.
Oh.
This is too fancy.
Is mine on?
Yes, it is.
I know for a fact I was stopped there. You know, I've discussed this several times, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse. And I plan on being there in the near future. And I was stopped the second time, which I haven't discussed with you. It was because... I had my camera. I was on a public trail, and I had my camera in my hand. And I was approached by four security guards.
Really?
Asked me what I was taking pictures of. And
I'd like to know what your answer was.
we're on TV live, so I can't tell you. But trust me.
We would be happy to look into that. Maybe you could give me more information about the dates.
I'm going to try it again.
Okay.
I'll go back and because it was very embarrassing. I had my wife with me, and you know,
wow. They
stopped both of us. And at first I thought it was racial profiling, and then they got off on the camera thing because it was like. One guy showed up in a cart, and immediately another guy showed up in a cart, coming from the other direction. So they were obviously being coordinated by radio. And I know that my wife and I look menacing, but, you know, we really aren't.
Commissioner Burke, take Commissioner Clark with you next time. We'll see if
no question.
Age profiling.
Yeah, sorry.
We have periodically stopped by just to try to monitor it, and we haven't had that experience lately. We'll try again, but I appreciate any information you have.
Somebody do it with
space
they don't recognize.
Yes, we have.
You'd think they recognize my wife, because she's on TV out there all the time.
Right.
But, you know, they were kids. You know, they're security guard kids.
Yeah. Okay.
That's regrettable. Sorry.
Any other comments? Of the report? And then a report from the report? Okay. If not, then we'll move into the South Coast District.
Thank you.
And Deputy Director's report.
Thank you, Chairman Kruger. Item 10 is the Deputy Director's Report for the San Diego District. This is the list of waivers, non-material amendments, and extensions and emergency permits for the San Diego District. Today there are two regular waivers and two de minimis waivers and two non-material amendments. We haven't received any adverse comments on the amendments or opposition to the waivers. Therefore, staff recommends that the Commission concur with the executive director's determination and approve the deputy director's report.
Any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination and approve the report? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item 10A is the completion of the LCP amendment certification process for the City of San Diego LCP Amendment Number 106D Density Bonus Revisions. By its action on March 21st, 2008, the City Council has acknowledged and accepted all of the modifications to the LCP implementation plan suggested by the Commission in its action on March 6, 2008. In accordance with the Commission's regulations, the Executive Director must determine if the action of the City of Carlsbad is legally sufficient to finalize Commission review of the LCP amendment and must report that determination to the Commission. The Executive Director has determined the City's action to be adequate and recommends that the Commission concur with that determination.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the Executive Director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs. And before we go on to, there's no consent calendar, is there, that's been moved to the, before we go on to 12A, I've had a few of my colleagues ask for a bio break for 5 minutes before we move into, next item will be 12A, City of Oceanside LCP amendment. Let's get going again and start the meeting. And with that, we'll start with item 12A, City of Oceanside's LCP amendment. Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Kruger. I'd like to refer you to the addendum. There are some revisions to the staff report in response to the city's letter that was dated 6/25/08. That letter has also been distributed to the commission by the city, along with a copy of the approved resolution of approval for the LCP amendment. There are three letters of comment. The two in the addendum are generally in support of the project without the mitigation fee. And there is an additional letter in the addendum in support of the staff recommendation. We've also received two additional letters yesterday in support of the staff recommendation that could not be copied and distributed to the commission, but they have been made part of the record. This is a request by the City of Oceanside. Could I have the PowerPoint on this, please? Request by the City of Oceanside to amend the implementation plan of its certified LCP to allow for both condo hotels and fractional ownership development in subdistricts 1 and 2 of the redevelopment area. This also includes new Article 4A titled Redevelopment Project Area Use Classifications that applies to the entire downtown district, which is also the redevelopment area. Article 4A revises and defines uses permitted, including visitor-serving uses. This LCP amendment is a resubmittal of the amendment that was the subject of the Commission action in December 2007, which the Commission approved with suggested modifications, but all of those modifications were not accepted by the City. That's why this is a resubmittal. The submittal has incorporated all of the changes suggested by the Commission, except the City Council action did not include any reference to a mitigation fee for a provision of lower-cost overnight accommodations. In addition, the City has made some changes to the language that establishes restrictions on the operation of condo hotels and fractional interest units. Most of these changes have been a result of extensive coordination between the Commission staff and the City since the December action and are acceptable to staff. The exception is the language that requires the hotel operators and all potential owners to have joint and several liability and responsibility for compliance with the restrictions related to operation of the hotel facility, particularly when the units are not owner-occupied. This slide one shows the area that's the subject of this LCP amendment. It is shorefront property consisting of two blocks on the inland side of Pacific Street on the blufftop inland of the beach, pier, and amphitheater. It's the prime visitor-serving destination point along the city's oceanfront, and specifically the LCP amendment would allow condo hotel and fractional interest hotels in subdistricts 1 and 2. This is a project-driven LCP, and in this case, there would be 336 hotel units and 48 fractional interest units allowed in this location, the two blocks immediately inland of Pacific Avenue in Oceanside. And that project would be enabled by this LCP amendment. Given the LCP amendment has been reviewed by the Commission once, I'm going to try to focus my comments on the areas of known disagreement. The primary issue discussed by the Commission in review of the LCP amendment previously was protection of lower-cost visitor overnight facilities in the coastal zone and whether condo hotels and fractional interest units, which are not as available to the general public as traditional hotels, should be allowed in areas designated for visitor-serving uses, which are a priority use under the Coastal Act. The City of Oceanside has provided an inventory of existing hotels and motels in the coastal zone, which indicates there are currently 516 units in 12 facilities that provide rooms at less than $100 a night. The Commission has acknowledged the City has more lower-cost overnight accommodations than most coastal cities, and the City desires to provide a high-cost facility, such as the one enabled by this LCP amendment, as well as a range of affordability of units in their coastal zone. For this reason, the Commission did not suggest a modification to the LCP that would require a fee in lieu of actual provision of lower-cost units in association with new development of this high-end hotel. However, the Commission did acknowledge that protection of the existing lower-cost stock, which is used as the rationale for not applying the fee to new development, must be addressed. In addition to the land use plan policy that protects a minimum 375 lower-cost units in the coastal zone, the Commission has required the fee be applied to loss of existing lower-cost units that are not replaced. In this particular case, staff is recommending the fee apply to 50% of lower-cost units that are demolished and not replaced, only if the replacement units are high-cost overnight accommodations. This requirement would apply in the redevelopment area only, which is the subject of this LCP amendment. And this is a departure from what was approved in December, and the fee would only apply because the fee would only apply to high-cost replacement projects. Also, this is a departure from some decisions that have applied the fee to at least 25% of new units or to 100% of any lower-cost units that are demolished and not replaced. This modification to the Commission's more typical policy to protect and provide lower-cost overnight accommodations in the coastal zone is in recognition of the City's existing lower-cost inventory. The staff recommendation also recognizes moderate-cost units are a valuable coastal resource and also in demand in the coastal zone and necessary to provide a range of affordability. So again, staff is recommending the in-lieu fee only apply to high-cost development and only when it replaces existing lower-cost inventory, and the fee is only applied to 50% of the units that are demolished and not replaced. In addition, I want to discuss what constitutes low, moderate, and high-cost overnight accommodations. The staff report includes a methodology that we are developing to be used to define what are lower-cost accommodations in the coastal zone. The formula or methodology was developed for San Diego, but it is a dynamic tool that could be used elsewhere using similar data for any region or market area to establish rates for that area. It utilizes the statewide average room rate taken from the Smith Travel Research website, in this case in July and August, which are the peak tourist months in San Diego. The projected statewide average price paid by visitors to hotels throughout California in the months of July and August for 2008 is $132.90. This number is used as the baseline by which to compare the cost of hotel accommodations in the targeted region of the state, in this case San Diego, and staff used the AAA website to locate 1 and 2 diamond rated facilities within 5 miles of the coast and determine their rates during the peak season. Of the sample, staff identified those that charge room rates less than statewide average, and the average rate for those facilities, in this case, was $108. And that was compared to the statewide average as a percentage, or 82% of the statewide average, and that's the low-cost market in San Diego coastal area. So using this formula, the lower-cost overnight accommodations in the San Diego coastal area would be any establishment that costs less than 82% of the current peak statewide average. At some point, a survey should probably be done for hotels charging more than the statewide average, but for now, an estimate of higher cost we've defined as hotels with daily room rates 20% higher than the average, and then moderate would be in between the 108 to 160. And so above $160 a night would be considered high cost. The current staff recommendation does not incorporate this methodology into the city's LCP for purposes of defining what is low, moderate, and high cost. And we think that could be a mistake given the recommended policies include those terms. The implementation plan should reference the basic criteria used to determine affordability of hotel-motel units in the coastal zone. And we have distributed recommended language to be added as a suggested modification number 7 to Article 41, Redevelopment, Section 450, Visitor Accommodations, Special Requirements. And I'll read that suggested modification into the record. When referring to overnight accommodations, lower costs shall be defined by a certain percentage of the statewide average room rate as calculated by Smith Travel Research website. A suitable methodology would base the percentage on market conditions in San Diego County for the months of July and August and include the average cost of hotel motels within 5 miles of the coast that charge less than the statewide average, or 82%. High costs would be room rates that are 20% higher than the statewide average, and moderate cost room rates would be between high and low cost. Low cost, that's a typo. The range of affordability of new and or replacement hotel-motel development shall be determined as part of the coastal development permit process and monitored as part of the city's inventory of visitor overnight accommodations. This was given to the city just this morning, and so they may have some comments on the language for the commission. And now I'd just like to focus on the last area of known disagreement. The commission has defined condo hotels and fractional development as limited-use overnight visitor accommodations and has found that limits and restrictions must be imposed on the number of units per hotel project for which limited-use overnight ownership rights may be created and sold, and on use of the units by separate owners, as well as on how the overall hotel is operated. The proposed definition of limited-use overnight accommodations is overnight accommodations that includes both traditional hotel lodging and some combination of timeshares, fractional timeshares, or condo hotels. The city is proposing up to 25% of a hotel development may be timeshares, fractional timeshares, or condo hotels. However, no more than 15% may be fractional timeshare units. The city has included language in its submittal which requires that privately owned units not occupied by the owners or their guests must be available for overnight rental by the general public in the same manner as traditional hotel units. This achieves two ends. It increases the facility's visitor-serving function by increasing the number of transient overnight accommodation units available to the general public, and it promotes the likelihood that the overall facility will be perceived as a facility available to the general public. The commission has found it's important that all units in a condominium hotel, both condominium hotel units and the traditional units, be operated by a single hotel operator of their respective facilities. This includes booking of reservations, check-in, maintenance, cleaning services, and similar responsibilities of hotel management. This requirement is important as a means of assuring the hotel does not convert to a limited ownership only hotel and to maximize its visitor-serving functions. These restrictions and requirements must be implemented as part of the operations of the hotel, and consequently, a specific entity responsible for implementing the restrictions and requirements must be identified. The appropriate entity would be one that has access and control over the entire facility. The facility's owner-operator is in the position to implement the necessary restrictions and requirements. Therefore, the suggested modifications reference the hotel owner-operator as the entity responsible for implementing the restrictions and requirements. However, the language needs to also address a situation where the hotel is owned and operated by two separate entities. It must be clear that in such situations, both the owner and the operator are responsible and indeed liable for carrying out the requirements and restrictions imposed upon each facility. And this is reflected in the suggested modification. The Commission's found that only through these use restrictions and other conditions requiring that these limited-use facilities operate in such a manner that they will maximize public access and function to the extent possible as a traditional hotel. An effective enforcement mechanism is necessary to ensure that the hotel owner, operator, and individual condo unit or fractional interest owners are complying with each of the conditions of the coastal development permit. And the suggested modifications impose joint and several liability on the owner and operator so that they have an equal incentive and interest in complying with the conditions of the CDP. The modifications also ensure that each individual condo owner unit or fractional interest owner is jointly and severally liable with the hotel owner and operator for any violations of the conditions of the permit with respect to each owner's individual interest. Through imposition of joint and several liability, the commission or the city may more effectively enforce the conditions of the CDP, thus ensuring that the hotels are operated in such a manner as to maximize public access. We believe this requirement is a continued point of disagreement. It is consistent with what the commission has imposed on other condo developments and in the Huntington Beach LCP amendment. We'll rely on the city or the project proponent to explain their specific issues with regards to this language. And that will conclude my comments at this time.
Thank you very much for those comments. And we'll go to ex parte, starting on my left, Commissioner Akashian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Wednesday 2nd, 10:30 a.m., I met with Morgan Rafferty, Executive Director of Environmental Center for Slo County, and Gordon Hensley of San Luis Obispo Coast Keepers. They had concerns about the in-lieu fees. However, they said if demolition is authorized, an in-lieu fee would be required as mitigation. Development of replacement units that are not lower cost shall be required to pay a fee in lieu of providing lower cost units, which is equal to 50% of the demolished unreplaced lower cost units if the replacement unit are high cost overnight accommodations. And they encourage, where feasible, to provide developments providing public recreational opportunities they prefer, and that the commission shall not first require that overnight rooms rentals be fixed at an amount certain for any privately owned and operated hotel, motel, or other similar visitor-serving facility located on either public or private lands, and two, establish or approve any method for the identification of lower moderate income persons for the purpose of determining eligibility for overnight room rentals in any such facility. The in-lieu fee requirement could help provide a low-cost alternative, campgrounds and others, to mitigate for the loss of low-cost units to demolitions, and pretty much this is a summary of what we talked about, and finally they recommend that we support staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Mr. Weisel?
In addition to those that are on file this morning, I met with Donna Andrews, who expressed the City of Oceanside's alternative ideas for maintaining affordability in visitor-serving accommodations. They believe they can ensure affordability by requiring 10% of new hotel rooms as affordable, and they will be adjusting the staff report format to require analysis of existing affordable rooms every time a new project is considered. And they basically summed up that there are two points of disagreement, one having to do with the fee, another having to do with several liability, and that they would speak to that at the hearing.
Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On July 3rd at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I had an ex parte telephone conversation with Penny Aaliyah of the Sierra Club and Graham Forbes of Unite Here Local 30. They conveyed to me their position that they support and recommend support by the commission of the two conditions of issue that we're talking about here relative to the in-lieu fees and the joint and severable liability. On July 7th at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon, I had a telephone conversation with Donna Andrews and with Jane McFay, the Economic and Community Development Director of Oceanside. They expressed concern, the city's concern, with these two conditions as proposed by staff in the amendment. On the in-lieu fee issue, they're basically conveyed to me that they believe that it's unnecessary. City already requires keeping a minimum of 375 rooms affordable, which is 90.8% of the rooms in the coastal area. They also indicated to me that previously they had heard from Director Douglas, who had previously stated in-lieu fees were not appropriate because it was a public-private partnership. The city, they also indicated the city intends to ensure that they not drop below the 375 unit affordable units. through a monitoring mechanism. And then on the issue of the language of joint and severable liability for condo hotels, they don't believe it's consistent with positions taken by the commission in Encinitas, Del Coronado, or Pacifica. And the city currently requires the owners to certify they will comply with the conditions associated with the condo hotel sellable units. And that's my ex parte, Mr. Chair.
Other commission, Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My ex partes are on file.
I had an ex parte telephone conference call when I got back in town on the 7th of July with Jane McVeigh, Kathy Baker, Jeremy Cohen, and Donna Andrews. And we discussed very much what Commissioner Clark and Commissioner Waso had mentioned. We talked about the two issues that I had questions on that were staff and the city have worked very hard to get down to really these two issues. And we discussed the joint and several liability issue, and we talked about the different intervals and time periods, and talked about the issue of previous hotels that we had and got the joint and several, or where we discussed like an Imperial Beach, etc. Those were 100% conversions, and we were talking about the fact of, from a pure operating viewpoint, whether or not, what is the theory of concern would be a flag. If you didn't have a big flag on a hotel like this, that is a large hotel, what would be the likelihood for a flag to come in and agree to some kind of joint and several liability? And they discussed the issues of monitoring, and because of their TOT tax and other issues, they could assure that that it would be in compliance. So there was a real concern from the marketplace with the slipping of real estate and credit markets and everything, of just what a flag or a large operator would do to that particular thing. And there was a big discussion on that, because that is of even concern to myself. Even though I want to make sure people have equity in the game, skin in the game, as we've said, we did talk about that issue, and I wanted to see why they feel they have skin in the game and why it's different than maybe Imperial Beach or Huntington Beach or et cetera. So we discussed that, and it was, those are the issues other than what was reported already. And also I got a phone call from a Councilman Kern, that just a phone call I did asking to support the City of Oceanside, and a call from, that was on Monday, and then that was just a voice message, and I got a call on Tuesday from Deputy Mayor Rocky Chavez, and when I did answer that call, and I told him I'd already talked to people from his city, and he was fine with that, and said if he could support this, listen to what the city had, and they'd worked hard on this. So those were my ex partes. Anyone else? Commissioner Kinsey?
On Monday, July 7th, two members of the organization ORCA contacted me at my office and expressed support for the staff recommendation, and suggested that in Bodega up in Sonoma County there were similar issues as the Oceanside issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blank?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My ex parte with Donna Andrews is on file. I also had a conversation with Lenny Roberts from ORCA San Mateo, which she expressed her support of the staff recommendations. That was on Monday. And this morning, driving to the commission hearing, I shared the car with Commissioner Waso and Donna Andrews, and basically heard the tail end of their ex parte, so I would kind of summarize whatever Commissioner Waso said I heard as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Blaine. Anyone else? Commissioner Cram, did you have any? Or no? Commissioner Burke?
My ex parte are in file, except the one that
Okay, thank you. And with that, we'll open up the public hearing, and we have three speaker slips, all from the applicant and two representatives of the city. And who would like to come up, Ms. Jane McVeigh? Would you like? How much time do you want between the three of you?
Mr. Commissioner, I would request 11 minutes, and we'll keep 9 for rebuttal, please.
Okay, just so you know, I don't think there's any speaker slips, is there, in opposition. So you might want to take your time and not reserve for rebuttal, because there won't be any rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you very much. Do you want more than 11 minutes?
That'd be great if we could have...
15 minutes?
15 minutes.
That's fine. Okay.
If I could have my PowerPoint brought up, please. Well, good morning. My name is Jane McVeigh. I work for the City of Oceanside, and we're here today on the LCP 1-07 and 2-08, which are both the revised findings and the resubmittal. We last appeared before you in December 08 when we were in San Francisco. Also with me here today is Kathy Baker, our redevelopment manager, and Jeremy Cohen with SD Malkin, who is the developer for the project in question. Before we begin, though, I do want to clarify, this was not a project-driven LCP. This all started with a major review of our zoning in the redevelopment area because we couldn't get a Kinko's downtown because the zoning didn't permit it. So we did a year-and-a-half-long process, and it was a big rezoning modification to some old zoning. So it really isn't and never was a project-driven LCP. But we have been working very closely with the coastal staff, including the executive director, and as Sherilyn said, it's winnowed down to these two big issues, and we have covered, 99% of this has been agreed upon, but these are our two outstanding issues. One is the proposed fee. Am I going to click this someplace? There you go. The danger of technology. Well, I know that F is forward, so let's try it again. Oh, here we go. So these are the two issues left. The proposed fee for hotels that demolish and rebuild and are not considered affordable, and the operational issue of joint and several liability. But let me put this into some sort of context for you. I know that you were here in Oceanside or in Oceanside last year, but Oceanside has 3.5 miles of beach, ranging from the north side of the harbor there down to the lagoon between Oceanside and Carlsbad. Now, the Coast Highway is only about the equivalent of 3 blocks. I mean, they're the short sides of the blocks, but it's only about 3 blocks from the beach. And all of Coast Highway is commercial, the whole entire thing, and that's where most of the hotels are. In general, let me just back up and show you that. In general, from the harbor down to the river there, that's a pretty recreational area. Then from the river down to what we call the 9-block master plan, which is the core area of downtown on the ocean front, it's quite a bit of residential, and then the core area is the commercial area, and then south is a mix. Now this whole area is in, or the downtown area anyway, is in the redevelopment area, and I haven't outlined the redevelopment zone for you, but pretty much it's west of Coast Highway, and it jogs a bit up to the east, but principally it's west of Coast Highway. Now this area that you see outlined is the 9-block master plan. This area is part of our certified LCP, and it says that you have to have a minimum 240 rooms there, and it actually calls out a destination resort. So what happens in this 9-block area, we have one project that's built. We own one block that we want to build a parking garage on, but you can't do anything in this unless you either build your fair share of the 240 rooms, you can't pull a permit, or until the 240 rooms are built. Now, if you look around that red ring, you'll see a lot of development, but what you see there is very little development in there, because it's sort of the whole of the donut effect. The marketplace and the activities of our redevelopment manager, Kathy Baker, and just all the things that we do for the city has created a lot of activity and a lot of new development around there. We have new shops, we have some new restaurants, we're getting a microbrewery, we have some new clothing stores. We really do a lot, but what stalled is this central area because we can't materialize this, this main hotel. Now, we did do an RFQ, we did get a developer, and we have a commitment of $27 million to a project. And this is the SD Malkin Beach Resort. So out of that 9 blocks, those 2 blocks are the ones in question. And again, Coast Highway has the bulk of our hotels. If you're thinking that this is going to become, you know, instantly a very high-end area, this is probably our last hope for a 4-star, or if not our only hope for a 4-star hotel, because we simply don't have the real estate and we don't have the land. And this project is actually going to produce more than is required in the LCP 9-block master plan area of 240 rooms, because we have 289 traditional rooms, 47 boutique rooms. The rooms are a little bit bigger. It's in a separate building. And 48 fractional timeshares. We didn't close the street. We didn't do anything, that the community didn't want to have happen. We already could do fractional or timeshares here, but when we got the executive director's memo that said if you're going to do fractional timeshares, and all that is you can buy a month, not a week, you need to change your LCP. Since we were already in process with the one to get the Kinko's in and change up our zoning, we added in some definitions. We also limited it. It's only in those 9 blocks, and this is the only project in those 9 blocks that this could actually happen. We limited it to 25% of total, so it's mostly a hotel project, and the only thing is there's just this wee bit of the fractional timeshares. Now, in December, you did not impose a $30,000 fee on new projects, but we were told that, you know, in order that we would get these fractional timeshares, that we would have to have this fee. And I want to share with you what we've got going right now. We require a minimum 375 rooms. We've got Motel 6 is proposing to add 17 rooms, which brings us up to 533. The LUP of the certified LCP requires 375, so we actually have 30% more than is required. Now, we're also 90.8% affordable. Most of the hotels on Coast Highway and all the hotels that likely will come are in the genre of the Motel 6, La Quinta, Comfort Suites, and those are the ones that we have. Now, we have had some questions about how are we going to maintain that 375, but the bigger issue is how are we going to keep the 375 from denigrating? So I want to show you what they are and how many rooms. These are small hotels. Many of them are not branded. They're on very constrained sites. And let me just show you how they cluster. They pretty much cluster on Coast Highway. That's where you see the 9, 11, 10, 5, and it goes all the way down so South Coast Highway. So, you know, they were old motor courts, many of them from the 40s. So here are some pictures. I mean, this is what we've got. That's our inventory. They're definitely not fancy. People stay there. But this is what we've got, and these are the pictures of some of them. So, again, the LCP requires that we have 375 rooms. Well, we wouldn't allow it to go below 375 rooms. And the question keeps getting asked, well, what are you going to do? Well, we're just not going to allow it. But we understand that the coastal staff still has that concern, and they have this new definition that moves it up to 159, which we really do appreciate because $100 was abysmally low, we thought. And so what we proposed was that we would, in all of our future cases where a hotel is going to demo and rebuild, we would include it as an ordinance, we would require it, we'll put it in our staff reports, that we would update the inventory, and we would be able to demonstrate at that time what our current warning would be. So it would be a warning mechanism, it would be a monitoring mechanism. So the bottom line of this one is that we really feel that these unique circumstances, we're next to Camp Pendleton, we've got all these old motels, that the fee should not be imposed, and we urge you to reject suggested modifications 6 and 7, but we will require the inventory. We will monitor this so you will be comfortable that it's being monitored. Now, all of this before you is in the redevelopment area. And the whole purpose of redevelopment is to encourage our property owners to invest in the properties. And this $30,000 fee is going to go diametrically opposed to all the things we do. We have a Main Street organization, facade enhancements. We've got an evening farmers market. We've got new street lights. We're doing all this stuff, and this is going to go the opposite direction of where we're trying to get to. So let me move quickly to the second issue, which is this joint and several liability issue. And again, let me put this in context. The only place that condos, tails, or fractionals are allowed is the nine blocks. In the nine blocks, it's only going to happen in the two blocks. And in the two blocks, it's only 48 out of the 384, so it's a small amount. So, and I want to share with you that we're putting $27 million into this, and the reason that the fractionals are being allowed is so we don't have to put more than that. That was a bitter pill for the community and the council to swallow, but to materialize something that the agency hasn't been able to do, it was created in 1975, 33 years later, there still is no hotel, they put $27 million into it. And also added these controls, and many of them were with the concurrence and direction from the coastal staff. But you can see 29 days in a 60-day period, no more than 90 days in a year. The operators required to disclose. The owners have to certify. The booking is done by the operator. The operator has to keep records. There's conditions in the CCNR. And the bigger issue and the hammer in this is that we can audit and you can audit. So we think that we've really got a lot of controls. The other thing is we've got a DDA and a lease on this project. The lease, by the way, is 214 pages long. They can barely change the petunias without coming to the city for some kind of a conversation about it. So we are going to be in the game. It's a 75-year lease with a 24-year option. So there's very little that they're going to be able to do that we are not going to, you know, have some kind of ability. So we feel like, you know, this belt and suspenders approach. We've got a very strong belt here. It's a very sturdy belt. We think we've got a ton of controls. The other issue that we really feel here is that when we met with the coastal staff on the issue of the joint and several liability, their intention was, who's going to monitor that all this is happening right? They want to make the individual owner liable for the operator and the operator liable for the individual owners. That language is still in there. However, you can imagine if you were a Westin or a Hyatt, how they would balk at being liable if an individual owner just lies about it. And it could ruin our deal, and we're extremely, extremely concerned about that. And this language, although you allowed fractional timeshares and condo tails, this language of joint and several from the marketplace standpoint and what we're hearing from the operators would likely eliminate our ability to do it. Now, we've learned a lot about these hospitality types, and I think that the coastal staff and our staff and both together have done that. We've come to a lot of understanding on a lot of these issues, but based on our information from our developer, this is a big issue for us, and we would ask you not to impose the joint and several liability, that we already have sufficient controls in place. We're working with experienced developers, experienced hoteliers. So in suggested mod, we would ask you not to accept staff suggested mod 4 and 5 and remove the joint and several language and accept the city's language. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. I know I ran through that really, really fast. We've got Jeremy Cohen here who's operated hotels and knows this far better than I do. And on the concluding note, I would share with you, we really look forward to you coming back to Oceanside in August. So we will welcome you in August, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Bay. Anyone else that would like to speak? Jeremy?
Just a couple of brief things. I won't speak to the fee because Jane has been very eloquent, and while it doesn't apply directly to our project, that was decided at the December Coastal Commission meeting. We've been side by side with the city on this because this is a redevelopment area, and they've got to get rid of some of the blight, and it does seem like double dipping to require them to keep 375 affordable rooms and then to charge them since they're over on their inventory now, if they need to reduce any of those rooms to clean up some blight. I do want to address the joint and several liability issue. It really should be more appropriately termed the joint liability issue because several liability is exactly what we're asking for. which is we have no problem with Hyatt or Westin as the operator of a hotel, and these are branded hotels, and not one of the conditions, not one of the projects with the condition of joint and several liability has ever been gone forward with a branded hotel. The only one we know of at all that's gone forward is the 27 very luxurious cottages that were sold by the Del Coronado Hotel. Others have accepted them, those conditions, but have not yet tested them in the marketplace. But the idea of several liability is everyone's responsible for their own actions. If the operator does not do everything in its power and it has a huge list of requirements, it's responsible. If Joe Smith buys a fractional timeshare unit and doesn't adequately report, even though we've asked for certified reports, he's responsible. A company like Hyatt or Westin does not want to be responsible for the actions of Joe Smith. They already have to, we have to use our best efforts to enforce the conditions that are there, and we've all agreed as to what those conditions are. There's no question about it. But it's simply trying to take a stick to the operator when it has no greater, you can give an incentive, but if you have no ability to force someone to do something, you just can't make them do it. Also, I think that you want a situation where the operator of the hotel, if he sees that an individual is violating, would come forward, share that with the city, and be able to take enforcement action. And if we turn it around and we hit the operator with liability for Joe Smith's failure to comply, you're not giving the operator the right incentive to come out, because it's sort of like telling the policeman, if he comes forward with someone who's not abiding by the law, he'll be punished for it. So we think that it's an unfair thing to do to the consumer to be responsible for the hotel operator and vice versa. I know our time is up.
Can you state your name for the record? I'm sorry.
Jeremy Cohen with SD Malkin Properties.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yes?
You have a question? May I answer the question?
Not at this point. Okay. We probably will, though. So, okay. So we'll have some questions. So. With that, I'll close the public hearing, go back to staff.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to concur in what Jane said relative to our working together with the city to narrow the issues here, and we're very pleased with the progress we've made and that we have narrowed it down to the two issues that you've heard before you presented here. And before Sherilyn gets into those, let me just point out, relative to the joint and several liability issue, it highlights one of the problems with these fractional ownerships or multiple ownerships in a hotel setting. Our main concern there is enforcement. How do we deal with enforcement when we have a situation where we would have to try to track down multiple owners in these fractional ownership situations. The liability issue in terms of financial responsibility, that's not of major concern to us. It's the enforcement of Coastal Act or coastal conditions. So let me ask Sherilyn to make some observations, and then we look forward to discussion with you on those two issues.
And my comments will mainly just to clarify the staff recommendation regarding the fee. It would only apply to demolition of lower cost accommodations when they are replaced with high-end accommodations. So in the city's letter, based on their representation, the fee would not apply to any of the projects that they've identified. That if the project is replaced as a moderate cost hotel, the fee would not be triggered. They've identified a number of smaller units that the letter seems to suggest the only thing that they might be capable of doing would be redeveloping as lower moderate cost units. And again, if that's the case, the fee would not kick in. It's only if the goal is to demolish all of the existing lower cost units and replace them with high-end units that this fee would be triggered. And if that is what occurs, then we think the fee would be appropriate. The city's LCP does have the policy that protects a minimum of 375 units in the coastal zone, and that is a minimum that it can't go below. They only have a 100 and some unit buffer between what exists and that minimum, and so the inventory that the city indicates is necessary to keep track of those units is necessary and is also required currently by the policy and the land use plan. That would be true regardless of what the commission does on this LCP amendment.
I think relative, again, to the fee, the situation as we see it is that the fee would not apply in the projects that have been identified for us in the redevelopment area. So and the city is saying, then if it doesn't apply, it shouldn't be in there. I think that's the message. Our concern is if it doesn't apply because of the formula that we're using, then you shouldn't have to worry about it. But if, for example, it's deleted and the plans change and somehow along the way high-end project comes forward there would be no fee requirement. So that's the situation that we're trying to cover here, that it doesn't apply given what we understand is being planned, but if there are changes in the future and you do have a high-end resort here, then it would apply using the formula. So that's the situation we're in.
Okay.
And council has a...
Ms. Meltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the joint and several liability, I want to be clear about something because I think I heard a misstatement from the city about the way the liability is written. The way it is written at the moment, there is no liability for individual owners for the action of, for the owner of individual units or individual shares, for the actions of the hotel or operator of the larger project. There is no liability for the individuals, the small owners. That's something we discussed in our call of June 18th, and we both agreed that we were in agreement that was correct.
What I heard was that they were talking about the hotel operator and
yes.
the owner thing, not,
yes,
the, not the individual owner.
Okay, well, I heard that it was that they were saying both. We do have it written so that the hotel operator or the larger owner is responsible for violations of individual owners for much the reason that Executive Director Douglas identified. Every condo hotel that the commission has looked at since the workshop on condo hotels has had this provision in it, and it is part of the template of provisions that the commission has looked at and used since then.
Okay. Mr. Cohen, would you clarify something?
We did discuss that in our phone call, but despite the conversation that we had afterwards, we don't think that the language reflects that second point. We still don't feel that it makes clear that the individual unit owner would have no liability for failure to comply on the part of Hyatt or Westin as an operator. So we agree in principle, but we just don't think that the language...
you just took my language.
It's on page 20. And right now it says each owner of a fractional interest is jointly and severally liable with the fractional hotel owner-operator for any violations of the terms and conditions of the coastal development permit. So we feel that language is still in there, and we did discuss it, and we felt that was the intent, but we haven't seen that language adequately reflecting it.
Well, I'm sorry. Actually, we talked about it, and we the language I'm reading that says that it says with respect to the use of that owner's unit. But on the 18th, you did say that your attorney would get us language that you thought better reflected that, and we have never received anything since then.
It's an issue of even with respect to your own unit. If Joe Smith owns a unit, he shouldn't be responsible if Hyatt Hotels blew something and didn't do it on his unit. If we have agreement on that, then we should just make sure the language works.
We do.
We thought we did.
Then we'll be happy to work with you to make sure it works, and then we are limited to the issue of the operator's liability.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Thank you, Ms. Meltzer. Okay.
I just wanted to indicate it seems that there was a communication issue here, but we were in agreement on that point.
Okay.
And so we'll clarify the language to make sure that it reflects what Mr. Meltzer said and what we just agreed on the record. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the operator side that's...
Yes, that's just still in question. Okay. And with that, is that it from the staff at this point, response? And with that, I'll go to Commissioner Wiesel first.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask some questions first, if that's okay.
Sure.
I have questions regarding the intent of the LCP amendment. Was the original intent only to cover the 9-block area that was in question, that you showed on the slide? In terms
Commissioner,
of the amendments to the LCP would apply only to the 9-block area?
Commissioner, no, that's not the case. The original LCPA was for the entire redevelopment area, dealing with zoning of many things, everything from espresso carts to, you know, the Kinko's. So it included a complete redo of the zoning matrix, but at that time we did include the definition of the fractional timeshares because we were in process with the hotel and we had received a letter from the executive director, so we followed that direction.
So in terms of the fee and the way it's applied, it's only applied if a low-cost serving accommodation is eliminated and replaced by a higher cost. Is that how you understand it?
That's our understanding from the staff.
Okay. So right now, currently, as of staff's report, there are 516 units under $100, 516, and only 375 are protected under your plan?
We currently have 533 that are considered affordable at the under $100. 375 are what are required in the LUP of the LCP, so we believe that we have in excess of the 375 requirement. And on a daily basis, we're adding additional hotels like the Holiday Inn Express that's under construction right now.
That would be...
In addition to the 533.
So that wouldn't be affected by the $30,000.
Well, we don't know what their price point is, but we will have to wait and see.
Would it be affected by the $30,000?
Not as new development, no.
Not as new development.
Right.
So it's because it's not eliminating low cost.
That's correct.
Okay. In the staff report, it mentions that the fee applied to 50% of the units in the redevelopment area. Does that mean that of the... How many units are in the redevelopment area? How many low-cost units are in the redevelopment area?
Mr. Commissioner, I believe that the 50% applies to 50% of the net new rooms in an individual unit, not 50% of the entire rooms in the redevelopment area.
I didn't understand that. Can you explain that again? The 50% of...
The fee formula, as I understand it, if you have a hotel and you demo it and you're going to rebuild it, let's say that you have 50 rooms,
right.
You build 100, that you're going to pay 50% on either net new, so 50% of the 50 or 50% of the 100, which is a different calculation.
If you build 100 units, 50 units would be subject to the $30,000 fee?
Let Sherilyn explain or try.
The fee applies to 50% of the number of units that are demolished and not replaced in a high-cost facility. So it's only 50% of the demolished units. It is not 50% of the total number of new units on the site.
So if you demolish 100 units and build a 400-unit all high-cost, you destroy the 100 units, let's say, the fee only applies to 50% of those?
That's correct.
Okay. So it's possible that they can... Of the units that would probably be affected by this, we're talking about 533 minus 375. We're looking at about 158 units. So the fees would only apply to about 72 units, somewhere around there. If we're only talking about 50% of those demolished, because your plan protects 375 and you have 533.
That's correct.
But then we'd have to go back to analyze which ones are in the redevelopment area.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the likelihood that this fee would ever even be imposed?
Well, depending upon the location of the particular hotel, many of our properties are World War II era functionally obsolete motor courts who are on small lots
that back up to alleys. You typically have utilities in alleys, and you can't build buildings on them. Behind those alleys are residential. Next to them is commercial. So they have extraordinarily limited redevelopment opportunities. There are a couple on North Coast Highway.
How many of those are there that you think would be...
None of the ones
replaced?
On South Coast Highway I don't see in the long-term redeveloping. On North Coast Highway, which is in redevelopment, we would have the guest house in, which does have an application in right now, and we would have the Coast Inn, which is 27 units, I believe, and then we have a couple of other ones. So
let's speak to just the redevelopment area and
okay.
what potentially can be affected in the redevelopment area that could face, I mean, how many units are we talking about in the redevelopment area that could face this fee that you can see?
Probably about 150.
150 units that could be demolished and replaced with higher
potentially
cost units. So we're looking at about 75 units would be subject to a fee. Those
potentially.
In the redevelopment area. Has staff ever considered in terms of I guess that could still be done. In other words, you can still protect those units using redevelopment funds to subsidize a project. We're looking at about 75 units that you can subsidize a hotel builder that comes in and builds high-cost units. You can technically still provide those units using tax increment financing or bond financing of some sort in the redevelopment area.
Technically, we could. What we have chosen to do at this time, all of the hotels that have been built to date have been market-driven, and we have not put money in them in North Coast Highway to subsidize a high-end hotel because of their adjacency to trailer parks that are not likely to be moved. So the likelihood of a high-end hotel going next to either a trailer park or a nude bar is rather low. So we have not invested in hotels adjacent to those uses and have chosen to allocate our funding to where we have a legitimate opportunity to create a high-end hotel.
Okay, so what you're arguing here is that if we had a project like those adjacent to a trailer park or a...
Nude bar. Also called a non-conform... We try to call it a non-conforming use. It sounds a wee bit nicer.
Okay. It's non-conforming. It's not consistent with your plan?
Yes.
you just embarrassed me here. Anyway. So you're saying that because of the location and because of non-conforming uses... that it's unlikely that you'll build a high-end hotel, which means if they are demolished, that you'll probably just build something that's within the income range of what's for.
Most likely.
So they probably won't pay the fee anyway. Is it assuming, I mean, we've created a range that comes up to about $160,000. That would pretty much dictate the type of investment that's going to go there, because it seems that if it would require $165,000, we're talking about $5, and imposing a fee of $30,000 seems to somehow create somewhat of a burden on their ability to finance a project on a difference of $5. Some of these projects do get down to details. You're saying that this methodology has a sliding scale and it's adjusted based on room rates statewide, and that's adjusted on a yearly basis?
I don't know exactly whether it's statewide. You do look at the particular area.
Your methodology is in the coastal zone.
Right. And there are statewide averages that are built into it.
But our methodology is coastal zone hotels statewide.
Right.
Okay.
The other part... the main point is that we think under our formula, the fee simply wouldn't be triggered because the replacement units are going to be affordable and they're not going to be high end. So I think what you just heard is that there's a very low likelihood of a high end resort going in here, and therefore we just don't see that that's applicable at this time. Who
okay.
knows what will happen in 10 years, you know, to the area. But
right, okay. So, okay, I just want to reiterate the amount of units in question, about 150, that would be affected by this proposal. That of that 150, 75 would be, so we're really talking about 75 units here, that
okay.
maximum
yeah.
that would fall under this this LCP amendment.
That would only be if they are demolished and replaced with high-end units.
Mr. Chair, if I'd like to prepare, make a motion following any questions that the commissioners would have.
Yeah. Commissioner Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple questions and a couple observations. Let me start with the in-lieu fee. And for staff, in terms of, could you refresh my memory and maybe some of my colleagues' memory, in terms of our condo hotel projects that we have approved, which ones have we imposed the in-lieu fee on?
You want the wrong issue. It's not going to bring us anything that's 35.
Any?
I know that the KSL project in Encinitas had the in-lieu fee applied to it, even as a traditional hotel.
Uh-huh. Is it a new convention from a staff perspective where we're seeing now, well, this is a brand new proposed resort hotel within the redevelopment district, correct?
The project enabled by the
right.
LCP amendment, yeah.
Okay. We didn't apply this to Terranea, did we? The in-lieu fee?
Which one? Where?
Terranea, Rancho Palos Verdes. We didn't apply it to Del Coronado, did we?
The in-lieu fee?
Yeah. I guess I'm really asking, is this the first time we've applied
no.
it? You said
oh,
Encinitas?
No, this is not the first time. There was a Surfers Point timeshare development in Encinitas that was recently approved with the in-lieu fee. There's been other projects in Northern California where the in-lieu fee has been applied, and it is more typically applied to 25% of new development. But
okay.
the commission specifically addressed that in their action in December in this case and did not apply it to this new development proposal and was only applying the fee to when there was demolition of the existing lower-cost units that weren't replaced.
And there are at least two projects in Central Coast to which we applied it. The in-lieu fee is not new. It is something that the commission has historically apply to ensure that lower cost overnight accommodations are provided, whether it's in new campgrounds or whatever. So that's nothing new. But you have looked at it on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
And as Sherilyn just pointed out, in the case of the development that's proposed here,
right.
you decided not to apply it.
In December?
Yes.
And now the staff is proposing to apply it?
No.
No.
No. That you've acted on that. We're not changing that.
Oh, okay.
What we're saying is the remainder of the area, it would only apply if there were high-end units that came in, but we don't see that happening.
Yeah, and I think on that point, what I take away
right.
from...
High-end replacing lower cost.
What I take away from the testimony before the commission today is just that, Peter, that the staff's position is, given what is... projected to occur, it wouldn't play. But by putting the in-lieu fee in place, it acts as an insurance mechanism if there is future high-end development. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, then I understand it. Let me turn to the joint and severable liability. If I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the issue at play for us from staff's perspective and advocacy to the commission is holding now the owner-operator responsible. Is that correct?
For compliance with coastal permit requirements, conditions.
Right.
Correct.
And in that context, and I think I heard this, but I just want to clarify that I did hear this, that we've had that joint and severable liability requirement in all of our other condo hotel projects. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I don't think it was in all of them. But it has been in some.
Can you mention, does anyone know which ones?
It's been in all since the Condotel workshop.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. The argument I hear from the city and from their applicant for this hotel is that this could be dealt with through what they consider sufficient controls, being audits. And I guess that doesn't go to my main concern with respect to this is how do you really, if you don't have this language in there, how do you really deal with holding the operator accountable? So let me ask the applicant and the city to come back up and explain this a little more in detail.
The operator is liable. He's liable for not fulfilling his role or her role in the and fulfilling the conditions that have been set forth today, which we all agree on what the conditions are.
Well, if that's the case, sir, then why do you have a concern about the language proposed by staff?
Because it goes beyond holding people responsible for their failure. It goes to holding them responsible for the failure of others that they can't control. And so we feel that it is not right for Hyatt to be responsible or Weston to be responsible for Joe Smith's failure when the operator's done everything they can to enforce, to monitor, to report, to audit. But people, unfortunately, can do things. The operator will take responsibility.
Your position is somewhat contra to other developers who've come before us and we've applied this language.
I think the issue here that we haven't discussed is, and just to speak to this issue, the problem of joint and several liability, if you already have a flag or you're an existing project, that's
right.
One issue. If you come in and you're building a couple hundred million dollar project and you don't have your flag down and you go to any of these flag players and say they got to sign joint and several, they're not going to build that hotel because they're not going to be able to get a flag or get their financing. And that's one of the areas that each one of these deals is different.
Like, right.
You know, I've always said, let's keep some skin in the game and keep,
right.
You know, the thing. The people have all kinds of skin in the game on this project. The city has $27 million. God knows what the developer has. We've had deteriorating credit markets, et cetera,
right.
And that are going the other way. Everything's going to hell in a handbasket. They're still here going to build the hotel. And this $30,000 fee, in this case, in my opinion, it's irrelevant because it's in a redevelopment area. And for you local government people, et cetera, the problem is I'd rather have in every one of these districts where cities or counties put in a floor. The city of Oceanside has a floor, 375
right.
units. That is really something because you can get $30,000, take half the units, take 150 units. You might raise $2 million. What are you going to do with that? You can't replace those floor units, et cetera, that you're based into the thing. To me, the real issue here is maintaining that floor. And does that 10%, if you add to it the suggestion the city was going to do, is that increase your floor or is that just maintain the floor? That 10%, if you the proposal that you ask, I noticed in here for the commissioners, it might be helpful
to you.
Does that increase the floor?
Chairman Kruger, that doesn't increase the language in the LUP, and we offered that reluctantly only to request humbly that you not impose the fee on the city. And that was offered in lieu of the fee, and the suggestion was made, again, reluctantly, that should you see your way clear to not imposing the fee, that the city would require any hotel or motel who is lower cost, who demos and rebuilds, to replace and to be required to maintain 10% affordable.
Okay. The reason why I bring this up at this point, you, Commissioner Clark, you're on a good point, and the other commissioners here in raising these questions, is to me, Oceanside is different than what we did at Huntington Beach. Huntington Beach, you remember, we did a really technically 100% conversion
right.
because they agreed. They already had their flag. They already had their flag. They joined separate. Hotel Coronado, same thing. There wasn't this thing. And I think the applicant is correct here. It's one thing to be severally liable, but nobody. I never agree to be joint and several. I'm not going to be responsible. You can imagine what a big corporation, a big flag that just gets a fee for operating your hotel. Why would they ever agree to that, even in the case, if they don't if they're building a new hotel and have to deal with these issues. I think that's a real concern that we should look at and could very well impede. I think the staff's done a wonderful job of getting it down to these last two points. They've dealt with these issues the best they can. But to me, I like the floor. And I like the idea of that because, you know, if you collect $30,000 for those replacement units, you're not even going to come close. You're going to go on a 6-to-7-1 ratio of the cost to build more affordable. So if you have 10% what they're offering, with those fees, you're not even going to be able to replace those 10% of those units with the extra money.
Mr. Chair, I hear and I appreciate your input here. Do I hear you also support what the city has indicated they would, if we didn't require that language, include as part of a potential motion the 10%?
Well, you'll have to hear from other commissioners there. I think it's good to have the other 10%. The devil's in the detail, and you just have to make sure that the monitoring and everything else is correct, that we can maintain that and the different things because of the TOT tax they monitor, et cetera. As long as the language is stringent enough, that's fine. I think the city, in this particular case, again, I don't want to be repetitive, but, you know, the whole idea that sometime the commission did an incredible job to get this floor in. If we had a floor in everything, because that's where you really lose on affordable housing or affordable hotel units. Oceanside is, I'll bet you they have under this new formula that we just came up with, staff is, and I think it's a good formula, they might not have 91%, they might have 99% of their hotel rooms in affordability then. All of them meet it. This is the poster child of affordable hotel rooms on the California coast. It really is. You spend any time in Oceanside and looking at all these ma and pa. And the last thing I want to say on it is that you got to be careful with these $30,000 fee, because what you want to do, if you're a redevelopment director or somebody working in redevelopment in local government, you've got to be careful that you have a 20-unit project, and if you tell the guy, look, you got to upgrade this, just get this up to standard, still maintaining the affordability, but a better quality affordable unit, and you say, I want $30,000 a unit for half those units because you're going to tear it down and build 20 more units back. Guess what? Okay. I'm not building it. I can't afford to do it because you've just wiped out my residual land value.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your ad here, and I have no more questions.
I have one more, if it's
Commissioner
possible,
Waisel.
Just to kind of, and this is from Jane McVeigh, I'm sorry. Regarding the history of the redevelopment
Is your mic on?
Yeah, it is, sorry.
Okay.
Regarding the history of the redevelopment area, at the last hearing, I asked questions regarding your affordable housing set-aside funds. You noted, and you mentioned, I recall at the hearing that you mentioned that those funds were invested outside the redevelopment area.
That's correct.
Do you have any plans to spend any future housing set-aside within the coastal zone portion of your redevelopment area?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Waisel, no, we do not, and let me tell you why. The property values are so high, and we are immediately adjacent to some neighborhoods that are quite low-end, that we have a lot of affordable housing immediately across the street from our redevelopment agency. And we have invested, and I do have some numbers, about 200 units in the past several years have been paid for out of the housing set-aside money. The agency just helped acquire a piece of property right outside of redevelopment that will probably create another 200 units. Our money goes farther if we go, you know, a mile away. So we've just chosen to, and we produce a lot of affordable housing, but it's outside of redevelopment.
Of this project that you anticipate constructing, how much tax increment will that project generate?
The current project, I think.
The hotel.
Do you remember the property tax? It's about $1 million a year.
And of that, 20% will be for affordable housing.
20% goes to affordable housing, our housing department.
But you can't invest that 20% on subsidizing low-cost serving accommodations. That can only be applied to permanent residential.
That's correct. The way the redevelopment law works, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the money comes in right across the top, 20% goes out, and it is spent by every city that has a redevelopment agency on affordable housing projects. In our implementation plan, because of the location of the agency, it is very constrained. It's very small. It's only 375 acres. It's quite coastal. Our implementation plan says that it can be within or without the redevelopment agency because our need is spread throughout the 42 square miles of the city. So it's we try to create it where it's needed and where it's where we can get it done.
Thank you.
Just one last thing. That's okay. You're going to raise maybe 200,000 or whatever the sum. What's your budget, redevelopment agency budget?
Our tax increment on an annual basis is a little over $6 million.
Okay. So this would add about $1 million to your tax increment base.
That's correct. And in the deal that we have on the DDA and the lease with the developer, the way we're making our $27 million back is through the property tax that gets created and the TOT. So, you know, that's our payback to get it done. And be it's a catalyst.
So you'll have somewhere close to just over $1 million to invest in affordable housing every year. And you're saying
a million? Yes,
a million dollars you can't create affordable housing in the redevelopment area? Using finance a project?
We have limited land, and we just have made a policy decision that the money goes farther. I mean, for what you would spend, you know, maybe $400,000 a door in redevelopment, you could spend maybe $100,000 a door and create more units outside of redevelopment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Wan and Commissioner Burr.
I'd like to get back to the discussion that we had that was going on about, well, given the nature of the area and what surrounds the existing lower-cost hotels, that it's such that you would probably not trigger this requirement for the in-lieu fees anyway. I'd like to point out that this is an LCP amendment which could be forever. And if at some point in the future you redevelop the area around those hotels so that now the area is much more desirable, in fact, you could have a situation where those get redeveloped into higher-end hotels. So I think that's the reason why staff is putting this mechanism in with a trigger for the possible consequences that might happen in the future. And when you're dealing with an LCP amendment, you always have to think long term. You wanted to interrupt me? Go ahead.
No, I'm just... Oh, I would never do that.
Right. But I do want to get to, and so I think in the long term, it probably is a good idea to have it, but I do want to get back to the discussion that in part also Chairman Kruger brought up about the importance of protecting that 375 unit floor, okay? And I'm looking at the city's letter, and they're trying to add to it because we had a lot of discussion in December, I believe, about whether this was really something that was enforceable, and realistically, whether you can put it in there as a number, but whether unless as things happen as you go, you deal with it, whether or not that's actually going to take place, because it's one thing to say we've got a 375 cap, but if you demolished everything and now you've got just the last remaining 375 units, how do you deal with them differently than you've been dealing with everybody else? One of the things, and that's my concern with relying solely on that to deal with your affordable visitor-serving facilities, but I would also point out that if the city talks here in terms of trying to add some additional monitoring to make that more of an enforceable issue, but I don't see any language here. All they say is a promise. We promise you that we won't allow that to happen. But if this commission is going to be really serious about this, then at the very least, we would need to see language that
that would satisfy me that in some way this was actually enforceable, because I don't see language. I see a promise, but I don't see language to enforce that, and that was my concern in December, and it remains my concern. Yes, I agree, having that floor is very important, and it's a very good thing to do, but unless it's enforceable, I don't know what it means. Yes.
Commissioner Juan, that was our concern, too, and in response to that, the city came up with this idea of if you get to a certain threshold, that 10% of the new units would have to be affordable. We think that's good, that's progress, but again, the question is, how do you make that work? How do you enforce the 10%? I mean, how is that going to work? And we don't know what the answer to that is.
I don't think that the 10% would be fine if it was in addition to the 375 units, but I have to tell you, the 10% doesn't mean anything, because you talk about an enforceable nightmare, and what does it mean? Somebody decides they want to go to a high-end hotel, and there are 10% of the rooms that are lower priced. I don't know what it means. Somebody picks up the phone, calls a hotel, and says, do you have lower-cost visitor-serving rooms in addition to the higher-cost visitor-serving rooms? Most people out there in the open market aren't going to know that. They're not going to know how to, and those rooms are not going to be reserved for the people who really need it, because somebody who picks up the phone to call a high-end hotel is not the same person who picks up a phone to call a Motel 6. And so the average public is not going to be able to take advantage of those rooms. So if it's an addition and it's a bonus, that's fine. But to in some way replace that 375-foot floor, that is certainly not acceptable to me. So these are the issues for me. One is the enforceability and the way to really make sure that we have that 375 units available for both low and, I would say, moderate income families, which is, as I've said before, is a major concern for mine. It's not just low end, but it's the moderate, you know, the middle class family. And the need for something to deal with the issue in the long run, not 2 or 3 years from now or even 5 years from now, but 10 years or 15 years when all of us are gone and now the area is being gentrified and they're coming in for high-end hotels and the public is going to get shut out of those. So those are my concerns.
Ms. McVeigh, do you want to comment on that then?
Mr. Chairman, we did prepare some language to the effect of the 10%, if that were the wisdom of the count of the commission. And our sort of the bottom line premise is that today at 90.8% affordable, with more affordable rooms than is required, we think even in the long term, given the geography and the real estate that we have to work with, that in your long term, which we also address, and the long term already has been 33 years and we still don't have the one high-end hotel, so we just don't believe that we're going to have a plethora of them even in the long term. You know, that's just the reality of it.
To Commissioner Juan's question about the 10%, though, the issue is, can it be an addition? That is something that she's looking for, in addition to your 375. If there is this, if you didn't have a fee, can you? Did you hear her point? Do you want me to mention
it again?
Yes.
If the mathematics would be that we have the LUP that states 375,
right,
and if what you're looking for is that, in the instance when any hotel demos and rebuilds,
yeah,
that the 10% of the demolished rooms remaining affordable, we could add that to the 375.
Done. You'll agree to add that to the floor. Okay. Okay. That answers her question. Was there anyone else while Ms. McVeigh is up there on this issue? Before I go to Commissioner Burke. Commissioner Burke.
I mean, you know, what I was going to say was basically on the various areas was that I totally agree with what you said about the whole issue, but
is it on now? And this future thing, see, I was told it was 42 years they had been working on it, not 33.
So if it's another 33 or 42 years, I'm willing to let the person who's sitting in his chair in 33 years. Now, Sarah will still be here. I know. And, you know, she can remind them of this. But there's a de facto situation going on with a lack of access to the beach in this area because of the current inventory that is on the surrounding properties. When you have the kind of activities that are going on that beach, there, I don't know another place in California, and I realize I'm probably one of the younger members, junior members of this board, but I don't know another place in California where you have the kind of activities going on the beach that would keep the average citizen from having access to the beach that are going on there. These people are trying to clean up that activity and trying to make this beach accessible. Now, this hotel is a, to me, a starting point for that activity. And to impose a fee of $35,000 a room on the initial project to get them out of the blocks, I think would be unconscionable. And on the joint and several liability issue, as you may remember, I was the guy who really put that out there. And I'm big on that. But in this case, you know, this is not a suit that fits everybody. It doesn't work in this case.
Commissioner Burke's last point there, if I can add, is very important. I mean, if you were going to them and they had their flag and they want to convert some existing product and change it, like staff has dealt with those issues before, that's an issue to ask for. But I think the city is absolutely correct on this issue of the joint and several liability, that it becomes a real problematic problem to see the project developed. It could very well be the big issue. And the other issue, again, is if we can get that floor and with great monitoring, et cetera, I think staff's done an incredible job to work all these issues down to these two issues for the city, but we can add that new 10% to that floor and build that floor up. That's a lot of units in an area like Oceanside, because what I'm very concerned about is these little mom-pa operations, that you don't create some kind of fee that they cannot redevelop or rebuild their site and build a nicer, because you want to get rid of all the rundown. There's some really rundown operations there, and they're still redeveloped, and they'll still, because they're so small, come under probably the affordable issue.
I haven't seen the proposal of the 10%.
Commissioner Waiso,
I haven't seen the proposal of the 10% units. And would it mean that any new hotel that's built that's high-end would require 10% of the units to be affordable? What's the proposal?
Mr. Chairman, no. The suggestion that had been put forth is only in the case of an existing hotel with affordable accommodations that demos and rebuilds, not a new one.
So if they demo, let's say, 100 units and they want to build 400 or they want to build 100 or whatever, they would only build 10% of the units affordable?
10% of the ones that have been demolished, so 10% of the 100. And I would also add, I can't think of a location where we would be able to build 400 units other than the one we're talking about.
So it would be let's say, 100 units. And it would demolish 100 units, and it would rebuild it as $400 a night, and it would replace the $135 a night.
10% of the original.
10 of them, so it would be 10 units.
That's correct.
Commissioner Blank, it was next, and then Commissioner Otagia?
No.
Commissioner Waisel?
I think this question might be for the chair or staffs. I just want to understand. We have a current. We have a current.
Push the button, turn your mic.
No, it was.
How about now?
Yeah.
Okay. Where it says mute, you can speak.
How about now?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
If I understand correctly, there is a current project being proposed, correct?
Yes.
And that staff has used the opportunity of this LCP amendment to, in fact, not apply the $30,000 for this current project.
Correct.
But use it in the future, since we happen to have the LCP open.
That's
to
correct.
Put protections in place.
That's correct.
Right? And that the reason we're doing this is there may not be another LCP amendment proposed in the future. So if we wanted to at some day impose a $30,000 fee, now's the time to do so. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And so our choice today is not whether we want to impact this hotel or not, because the $30,000 fee, we all agree, will not impact this current hotel, correct?
Right.
And so what staff is asking the commissioners, if I'm just trying to understand,
right.
is a future policy decision on what we want to do in the future for development in this area about a $30,000 fee
right.
for high cost. And Mr. Chair, I guess that's why the question is to you is
right.
now I want to ask maybe you to help me understand, to put your comments in context about future development and whether
yes.
you think this will impede future development for high-end hotels.
Well, first of all, as a developer, every time someone collects fees to do something like this, it's very difficult to trace them. You always better if you can get, like, increase the base, like the city has offered, where they're going to now put the 10% in, build the base up, etc. Because by getting $30,000 fee and getting the multiple units, that what's left up there is all these little mom-pa operations, etc. It's kind of silly. Because the money is not going to create anything in Oceanside. It might we have to track whatever it is. And the issue is one of from the city's perspective, and one I think they have a very good point on, is look, we came here. We have probably the only ones in the state and the Coastal Commission that have a floor built in where no one else has a floor. On top of it, we have the highest percentage of any project in the coastal California. And on top of it, we're willing to give 10% now, the working with staff, et cetera. And on top of it, you want to now go back on the rest of the redevelopment area, which they cities and local governments struggle with in these credit marketplaces, and they're enticing these operators to try to improve these facilities, et cetera, and you're asking them to add $30,000 on top of it. I think the city has the stronger argument in this case because of Oceanside.
Got it. So if I just understood your position, Mr. Chair, your point is that while the staff's recommendation is $30,000 going in the future, you feel the 10% is actually a better alternative for the city in this development area, and that the commissioners should actually suggest to staff that that's... what our preference is. Is that correct?
Yes, because okay. if you only because Thanks. Of Commissioner Wan's comment, by building and increasing the base from the 375 and adding that 10% of the units on, goes much further than leveraging $30,000 built by half of the units, whatever. Someday there might be $1 million, $1.5 million, or who knows, $2 million.
No.
But you're not going to build any affordable units with a subsidy because you're going to need 6-7 times that to build those affordable units. It's like a lotto game, but it really isn't going to do anything. Building the base does, preserving the base does, and building that base up makes a big difference.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, trying to get the gist of this discussion, I sense that what you're saying is that in exchange for eliminating any requirement for an in-lieu fee, that the 10% provision offered by the city would accommodate the concerns that we've
correct.
Raised under the Coastal Act. And we don't necessarily disagree with that, and we've said that the 10% offer makes some sense, but the problem is enforceability. We just saw some language for the first time here dealing with that 10%, and it doesn't do it. So my suggestion is that you consider I believe we still have the time to postpone this, to give us direction to work on the language to implement the 10% provision, and that I get the sense from the commission that if that's done, that you would eliminate the in-lieu fee requirement in the future, recognizing it wouldn't apply to anything that's being proposed now, but it wouldn't be required for anything in the future if the 10% is added to add to that floor number. And we could go along with that.
Okay. I'd like to hear from the city.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to postpone until tomorrow, and we could work on it for the rest of the day?
I don't
Sherilyn
think it's agendized.
Here,
is that for tomorrow? Can we turn
could
it
we
off?
Just instead of could we
continue
this until tomorrow? And we'll work on the language then.
No, we can't.
Can't do that.
Sherilyn's leaving, and she's got other responsibilities. We're going to be in Oceanside next month. What I don't see what harm would be done.
But if we do, and it's up to my colleagues and friends here, if we do. And I'm just saying, if we do continue this the next month to Oceanside, the single issue from the staff's perspective is this issue of being able to make sure that it's that we can preserve these units and that
the 10% works, that provision. You still have to deal with the joint and several liability issue, but at least relative to that other component, we just can't do that here today. I mean, looking at this language, I don't understand
what it means. What about going through the project today and finishing the other issues? We're here, and then leave the condition so that condition can be worked out, and the city is here today, and
well,
we...
I'm going to take a vote on without 10% of the staff.
Yeah. I think we want to go forward. We've asked Oceanside to come forward, and we're going there next month, and I, for one, think we can deal with this right now. It's subject to, again, it's important that we get the correct language, legal language. Is that something the city can work?
Yes, we would prefer that.
Okay.
To,
Commissioner Wan, I'm sorry.
Get it over with.
And the problem is there's two sets of languages that concern me. One is what the 10% is, okay, if it's in lieu of the in-lieu fees. We need to see that language. I certainly haven't seen that language. And I don't know what it says and how it's enforceable. So it's highly inappropriate to add that in place of something when we haven't seen the language. Now, and I don't know how you can do that in a hearing room right now. Now, maybe...
Well, I have a question for city staff
and then
that
might
address that issue.
The second thing is that...
And that might address the issue of enforceability as well.
In your letter... which also goes to enforceability, and it has to do with new language or how you're going to deal with protecting the 375 units. And it says it's in Attachment 1, but I can't find Attachment 1, so I don't know what the language is relative to actually enforcing those 375, which has always been my concern. Yeah.
I just want to ask a question of Jane McVeigh concerning the 375 protected units. Are you willing to increase that to, let's say, 400 protected units if we waive the $30,000 fee?
Mr. Chairman, if I could have a minute to think about that. I mean, I don't want to cut a hotel in half. I kind of know exactly what those are, but we do have 533. The current number is 375. So if what Commissioner Hueso is suggesting, that you would be willing as an alternative motion to move no fee if the city increased the affordable to 400 with no fee, no 10%, and then that gets the concern of the how you're going to enforce it and all, I mean, we'd be done.
Yeah.
But how do we enforce it?
That would cover all the issues today.
That would be the quickest, easiest thing.
We wouldn't need the enforcing language because the enforcing language is only for new units that are created under a new project. Under this, they have 375 units that are already protected under their plan. We would increase that to 400, so they would only be able to produce units that are within that range.
Yes. Yes.
We don't have language, in my opinion, to enforce even the 375 units. That's the issue that we dealt with in December. We don't, all we have is that there needs to be 375 units and a promise from the city that they won't destroy those. We don't have any sufficient language to protect the 375 or 400 or 512, whatever that unit is. And that's the language that we need to have.
Mr. Chairman, the LUP of the certified LCP says that we shall maintain 375. So we do not issue, have not issued coastal permits that would drive us below 375. So the items that we've offered were sort of the suspenders with that belt. I mean, it's quite plainly stated that we cannot go below 375, that we shall protect 375, and we have. We haven't issued any permits. So the alternative idea, I think, would be acceptable to the city to increase it to from 375 to 400 affordable units, which brings it up by 25 units, no fee, and then eliminate the 10%. So that would be very acceptable.
Mr. Okay. Chair, I'd like to make a motion, if possible.
Okay.
I move that the commission reject the implementation program amendment for the City of Oceanside it submitted and recommend a yes vote.
There's been a motion and a second, and that's per...
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, yeah. I believe we need a main motion and then an amending motion, yeah. And I don't think there's a main motion on the floor.
Well, I'm making the main motion right now.
Pardon me?
I just made the main motion.
He just made the main... the rejection.
May I permit to restate it?
Okay.
I'm making the motion that you recommended on the staff report, which is to move that the commission reject the implementation program amendment for the City of Oceanside as submitted and recommend a yes vote. And I'm going to make an amended motion following that.
There's a second by Vice Chair Neely. That's both right. The maker and the seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the rejection of the implementation program and adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Commissioner Wasel, would you speak to your motion, please?
Not at this one. I'll speak to my next one.
Vice Chair, you have an amending motion? No. Next? No.
There are two motions.
Two motions? Okay. Right. You ready for your next motion?
We've got to take action on this.
Okay, I was going to come back to the main motion. Okay. You're asking for a yes vote. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Shajian?
Yes.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Commissioner Burke?
Yes.
Commissioner Clark?
Yes.
Commissioner Wasel?
Yes.
Commissioner Cram?
Yes.
Commissioner Neely?
Yes.
Commissioner Kinsey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yes.
Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Chairman Flynn?
Yes.
Unanimous.
Commission hereby denies the certification of the implementation program amendment submitted by the City of Oceanside and adopts the findings that are set forth in the staff report. Commissioner Wasel?
I move that the commission certify the implementation program amendment for the City of Oceanside if it is modified as suggested in the staff report. Recommend a yes vote. And I have an amended motion as well.
I'll second.
Okay. You second it? Okay. Commissioner Wasel recommended a yes vote, and Commissioner Wan recommended a yes vote, seconder of the motion. Passage of this motion will result in the certification of the implementation program amendment with the suggested modifications and adoption of the resolutions and findings. Commissioner Wasel?
Yeah, I'd like to amend the motion to remove special condition number 6 and replace it with a condition to require the City of Oceanside to protect 3 instead of 375 units, lift the protection envelope to 400 units, and to provide to have the staff to come back with the proper language to ensure that those 400 units are, that there's an enforcement mechanism to make sure the city does provide an inventory of 400 units
right.
That remain affordable within the LCP area in the city of Oceanside.
Okay, that's reject 6 and 7, it's just 6?
And the LUP of this. I'm sorry, can you,
your motion?
Can you say that into the...
This is instead of the in lieu fee suggested modification by staff.
We remove the in lieu fee.
So that's just condition 6, not 7, to reject.
Well, I think condition 7 regarding the joint and several has been resolved in terms of city staff.
No, it's not been resolved.
I heard a separate comment.
Separate motion then on that.
It needs to be a separate.
Well, let's just deal with your 6 then, and we can come back if you want to make
an amendment. So you're saying 7 wasn't resolved?
No.
Because I heard the staff was going to work with
no. No.
Okay, then I do want to.
Partial.
I want to. Then let's modify that as well.
Do it separately.
Do it separately, though. I think you need two.
Okay.
Let's start with the first amending motion, which. Okay. Do you have a second to that?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Clark, and both of you are asking for a yes vote on this motion.
A question.
Yeah.
Yes. Commissioner Kinsey.
Question to the commissioner, perhaps. The motion talked about staff coming back with an enforcement mechanism, and I'm just curious how we would be able to have that have the enforcement of law if it comes outside of this hearing and our action today. And perhaps that's a question to staff on the motion. I support the motion as stated because it does, in fact, include the idea that there would be an enforcement mechanism if we fall below the 400 number, but we don't have that today other than the market forces and the character of the development in your community at the present time. So I'd be interested how we can get to that enforcement mechanism without having it in front of us today.
If the commission gives us direction on the type of enforcement mechanism they would like us to implement, the revised findings would implement the language of your decision today. So if your decision is that to increase the envelope to 400 with an enforcement mechanism, and we have discussed several ideas for enforcement mechanisms here, we can come back with something that reflects your decision with the exact language that reflects your decision
in
the revised findings, and then you'll be able to vote on whether it accurately does that.
It's fine. I hadn't heard this commission giving direction on the enforcement mechanism.
That was a request for direction on the enforcement mechanisms.
Well, you mentioned, and you all know that the enforcement mechanism is very important to me. The question here is, I haven't heard any suggestions from anybody, and maybe staff can make some suggestions as to how it could be enforceable. See, that's been my concern all along, is that I'm not sure how you could ever make this enforceable. So if you want to give me some suggestions as to what would make it enforceable, I'd like to hear those. And that's the kind of thing that we have to discuss, because that's why I think we were talking about continuing this so that we could look at language, whether it's the 10% or the 375 of now 400 units. Somebody want to tell me how it could be enforcible?
Chairman, Betty, would you like to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we had suggested in our letter to you were a couple of things. One was that we would offer to add in, as an ordinance if necessary, in our staff reports that if a hotel were going to demolish and rebuild, that at that time the inventory would have to be updated. We would change our city staff report format to include it, and the inventory at the time with the change in the demolition would then be therefore recorded. So we and you would be on notice of where we were with relationship to the 400, and that we would not issue a coastal permit that would drive us below 400. In addition, I would ask the chair to clarify whether the motion on the table is to deal with both 6 and 7 or just 6.
Just 1, and we're going to come back to 7.
I see.
Okay.
However, if you're going to create an ordinance, then that ordinance would need to specify that language. That ordinance would need to come back to this commission for our review and approval. Because for you to create an ordinance that says that, And then for us to have no way to look at that language to see whether or not it in fact does what we say, what we think it should, you see what I'm saying? If you do an ordinance, that ordinance needs to come back for our review and approval.
That's not what they're subject to.
Chairman Kruger?
Okay. Subject to our review and approval.
Okay.
Yeah?
I believe that if they incorporated that language, or if we incorporated that language into this implementation plan language, this section that all of these revisions are going into, that would be the same as an ordinance, and we could address that in the revised findings.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. That works.
That's acceptable. That's a good
Commissioner
proposal.
Clark? Yeah, just quickly on that point, what the city had just previously suggested is putting in their staff reports. That's not good enough, because the staff report is just that. So my conception was that they needed to institutionalize that in their development code. But if we deal with it by putting it in here, that takes care of it.
Ms. Schmelzer?
Just as an enforcement point and something to consider, while I think procedurally that can occur, if these mom-and-pop hotels, rather, if we get to a point where we're down to 400 and that proposal only addresses a situation where there's a permit, if somebody goes out of business, you've just gone under and there is no enforcement mechanism. And I think that's one of the things that your 10% situation and the in-lieu fee is trying to protect against, that there isn't just because of course the city can't just keep someone in business. So that is the type of situation that we were looking at as well, and that this proposed ordinance would not address.
Okay. Commissioner, anybody else before I call on? Yeah, Commissioner Schallenberg.
I think I am perhaps not clear on this because
your mic.
And which mic works?
This one.
Yes, all right. I knew there was a reason I've been quiet so long. Currently, they have 517 affordable rooms. Is that right, staff?
516.
Sorry. And what the effect of what we're doing now would be to say that going into the future, they can actually reduce the number of affordable rooms by 116.
That's
right. So this is going in the wrong direction if we're talking about providing affordable rooms in this area. So I think it's a terrible thing for increasing access. It will decrease that. The effect of it will be a decrease in access for affordable rooms by 116. So I would just urge my fellow commissioners to vote no, unless somebody on the commission or staff can explain to me why I'm wrong on that.
I'm happy to comment after the city.
I didn't ask the city. I'd like to hear from the staff or the commission, please.
Yeah. First of all, right now they have a requirement to do 375. They have 500 and some units because a lot of these units are pretty run down, as you can see. Except, again, what we don't want to do, they're not going the wrong way. What happens is we're trying to do is get the floor to build it up. The condition of these units are not exactly an asset for coastal access in some of these units. You wouldn't want to stay in them because of the condition of the units and the how small they are in nature, etc. The idea of moving the floor up higher, whether it be the 10% or what Commissioner Waiso suggested of an additional 25 units. Again, the city of Oceanside is 91%. It's probably 98% using their new numbers. So the whole stock of, that's what's so interesting about this debate on this particular issue. They meet any and all tests over any other coastal city in California. And what I am, for one, is I just don't want to see no good deed goes unpunished. I think the idea of a floor, if we could get the floor, whether it's 375, 400 now as suggested, or other cities to do it, that's the direction you want to be going in. Don't get caught with this number, whether it's 500, because it isn't exactly 500 units that you would actually occupy, per se, based on the condition of where they're at now.
Okay.
So it's more than a numbers game.
Chairman Crewe?
Yes.
Just, and to try to respond, and I am not necessarily going to help in this discussion, there are existing 516 units. The land use plan requires that 375 units be maintained. What I'm hearing is you're suggesting that that floor be increased to 400 units.
That's
so
correct.
The city's responsible for maintaining that number of lower cost units regardless of what we do here today. What the amendment is doing is suggesting, the amending motion is suggesting that there may be some additional measures that are incorporated into the LCP that would help ensure that that 400 units is maintained, that
there
may be some tools that the city might offer to do that. In my mind, I had thought the 10% suggestion was perhaps a tool that would help the city maintain that number of units, and that that was something that was independent of the in lieu fee. And I'm not sure, but I think the city has taken that 10% provision off the table.
Well, they did.
We don't want it.
We asked.
And because it is an enforceability problem.
Yeah.
With that, but in terms of enforcement mechanisms, I think staff would still be wanting to hear some other ideas that the commission might have for this suggested modification and these revised findings. At this point, we're not clear on just what additional measures the city might propose to incorporate into the IP at this time.
If I can just add to
Commissioner
that.
Weisel.
Every project, if it destroys units, if it proposes new construction, requires an environmental impact report of some kind under CEQA.
Under CEQA. Can they somehow, wow, this is real. I can barely talk. This is up on my lips.
Well, I get further away, and anyway, CEQA requires an environmental analysis. You just wiped my nose for me. Thank you.
I want to judge you.
He's my volume control. Thank you. If an ordinance is prepared by the city that they have to maintain 400 units, the environmental analysis required by CEQA would have to incorporate that. Am I incorrect on that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Hueso,
yeah.
In all cases when a hotel is rebuilding, if it were a very modest number of rooms, an environmental analysis is not needed. If you were doing I don't believe that the Motel 6 that's adding 17 rooms is doing a full CEQA by any stretch of the imagination.
And I'm not saying a full EIR. I'm saying some level of environmental review. If you have an ordinance in your city that has a certain threshold, do you have to address that ordinance when a new when a new project is proposed? Legally, you should.
Yes. Yes.
Is it possible that you won't? Is it possible that it may be overlooked?
No.
Why not?
We're very diligent. We meet, we're very cognizant of all the CEQA requirements. We make projects conduct full EIRs, focused EIRs, whenever the thresholds are triggered that require them. We always do that.
So even if it was a mitigative negative declaration or a negative declaration, you would need to do that analysis for hotels? Maybe Mr. Schmelzer.
That analysis is not part of CEQA. A local ordinance about the number of hotel rooms is not an environmental impact that's identified under CEQA and would not be addressed in a CEQA document looking at the discretionary decision in front of the local agency.
And even if the city ordinance said it should, it wouldn't be addressed?
It might be, they would have a choice of where they might want to address that and whether they would address it. But it certainly wouldn't be part of their CEQA obligation. That's a state obligation that does not incorporate that.
But I'm not saying that it's a CEQA obligation. I'm saying that there's already a review process that requires an environmental review.
Okay.
Well,
I have a suggestion because we're going in circles here.
Right.
Maybe what we should do is take 10 minutes and see if the city can talk to staff or something and whether or not we can come up with some type of that more clarity, whether we're going to do the 375 plus the 10% which you offered, or the motion now in the amending motion is the 400 units. And that's one issue. The second issue, the enforceability of the issue, etc. Because we're just going around in circles on this, and maybe the city can talk to staff, and maybe you can ensure. Because otherwise, this is going to, we're not. So let's take a 10-minute break, and you guys make your best efforts to see if you can come. So otherwise, if we can't, we might have to continue it if we can't get this going. So that's why I want to give you the time to do it, because we're, okay?
Mr. Chairman, we're ready to go.
Excuse me. We're ready to go. Okay. Director Douglas?
If we could ask Ms. McVeigh to read into the record the language that we just agreed to.
Okay.
And we'll make some comments after she does that. So.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'll read this slowly so it can be captured. This is a new paragraph B. The city shall monitor the LUP requirement to ensure that a minimum of 400 lower-cost units shall be maintained in the coastal zone by reporting the status of the current number of lower-cost units within the coastal zone within all staff reports containing a regular coastal permit, comma, and shall be forwarded to the Coastal Commission, period. A new paragraph C, entitled Assistance to Existing Lower Cost Units Within the Coastal Zone. At such time as the inventory of lower cost units would be at 405 units, the city would pursue outreach to the existing property owners in an attempt to assure their short and long-term survival period. Resources that can be brought to bear to assist them would include the city's facade enhancement program, comma, in which matching funds can be made available for painting, comma, awnings, comma, signage, and landscaping, period. A new paragraph D. Any project that is required to provide lower cost units shall be required to record a deed restriction against the property that requires the protection of lower cost units such that the demolition and rebuild of affordable units would not result in the total number of lower cost units to be less than a total of 400 in the coastal zone, period.
That's good. Mr. Director Douglas, or would you like to? It sounds very good. In 10 minutes or even less, you guys accomplished more than we discussed in the last hour and a half here.
Well, that's not unusual, is it? Sorry. I'm missing lunch. Did I just say that?
Yeah. Get ready for Commissioner Burke's response.
Director, we'll take
Mr. Chairman.
Right.
What we also agreed to is that when we come back with the revised findings, there may be some refinement of this, but the essence of the operative language is what Ms. McVeigh just read into the end of the record. So we're satisfied with that.
Okay. Commissioner Wan?
I don't want to throw a monkey wrench in here. Okay, so... But when you come back and you are looking at the revised, any kind of changes, I think one of the things that you added here that was quite good was how to keep those affordable units in actual use, which is what has been my concern, because if it's just the market that affects it, eventually those things will just sit there unoccupied and not run. So that's an important part of the enforcement, and if you look at how you can actually ensure that those affordable units that are being maintained actually are serving as affordable units, hotel units, and not being allowed to just deteriorate and not serve, that would be very important.
And we think that what the city has proposed here will do that.
Yeah. Okay, with that, I'll call clerk call the roll on the amending motion, the rejection number 6. And there's been a motion and a second, correct? Mr. Waso made the motion, and who made the second? Commissioner Clark. And includes the language that was just incorporated in by staff and the city, and everybody's in agreement. With that, is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call on that amending motion? Hearing none, the commission approves that amending motion unanimously. Commissioner Waisel?
And I'd also like to make an amending motion to adjust special condition number 7 to reflect the discussion that was being held here regarding the liability issue, where liability is not...
Chairman Kruger, it's not suggested modification number 7.
Which
suggested
one
modification number 7 is the one that was added by the staff today and addresses the definition of low, moderate, and high-cost accommodations.
Sorry.
I believe it's suggested modification number 5.
Was it 5?
5. I thought we talked about the city mentioned 7.
4 and 5.
This is gonna
it comes up in 4 and 5.
Okay, 4 and 5. Thank you for that clarification. Okay, Mr. Waso?
I'd like to make the motion to adjust special condition number 4 to reflect the discussion that was held here by the commissioners.
We don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. Maybe we can help.
In other words, on the severum liability issue.
Yeah. Oh, joint and several.
I believe you want to take out the word jointly and leave in severally.
Okay. So that they
operate. That's
in both conditions,
yes.
4 and 5.
I think that's what you want to do.
That's
right.
Exactly what I want to do.
Okay. That motion's been made. And is there a second? You're asking for a yes vote?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Akajian. Do you want to speak any more to your motion? Commissioner Akajian?
No.
Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on that item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves that amendment. Okay.
So what remains is several liability but not joint liability.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's it. And I want to thank the staff for... and the main motion we made the main motion. Yeah.
No, we have to go back. These are the amendments. You have to go back.
They have to go back to the amending motion, just for clarification. As modified?
Right.
I'll get you hooked up over there, man.
Okay. Commissioner Waisel, did you follow that?
On 13A?
No. We have to go back and on the main motion as modified and make that motion.
Right. I think what you need to do is vote on the main motion now as it's been modified.
Right.
So you need to take a roll call.
Okay, is there a second to Commissioner
Waisel?
So it's on the main motion, and they're both recommending a yes vote as modified.
Right.
Okay. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the project. Okay. We'll go to 13A now. And I want to thank, before I do that, I want to thank staff and what? Is there something else?
I'm sorry, it's 12B.
Time extension. I'm sorry. What number is that? 12B. I didn't catch that one yet. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Item 12B is the request for a time extension for the Commission Action on the City of San Diego LCP Amendment 1-08. Staff needs additional time to work on this. The city is aware, and therefore we recommend that the commission approve the time extension for 1 year.
Thank you. Commissioner Waiso? On the time extension?
Yes, I move that the commission extend the 60-day time limit act on the City of Sandy Law City Amendment Number 1-08 for 1 year. Recommended yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded, and they're both asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on the time extension? Hearing none, the time extension is approved. 13A.
13A is the revised findings for the commission action taken on the City of Oceanside LCP Amendment 1-07, the D Downtown District that was taken in December 2007. These findings should be adopted, but they really have been superseded and replaced by the commission's action that they just took on item 12A today. But we do believe that this reflects the commission's action in December.
Okay. Okay. Are there any ex parties on the findings? Starting on my left. No ex parties of any of the commissioners? Okay. I have one speaker slip. I'll open the public hearing. Jane McVeigh, if you wish not to speak, thank you for doing that. Okay. Commissioner Hueso?
I move that the commission adopt the revised findings in support of the commission's action on December 12, 2007 concerning the City of Oceanside LCPA 1-07. Recommended yes vote.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Hueso and seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passing this motion will result in the adoption of the revised findings as set forth in this staff report. Only those commissioners on the prevailing side of the commission action are eligible to vote. And so all those eligible to vote, would you put up your hand? Okay. Anyone else? Two. Did you get that count? Five. Okay, so they're approved. Executive
Mr.
Director
Chairman,
Douglas.
Since you haven't had your lunch break, my suggestion is we trail the statewide items till tomorrow.
That takes care of that bad remark you told us later earlier.
I
partially
needed to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for maintaining your patience and sense of humor.
No, you guys did a good job. What a sense of humor. Good, Mary.
Hey, Pat.
Okay. Oh, we have one.
Oh, I'm sorry. One public comment. Mr. Mumford.
He's not here. He hasn't been able
to. Thank you. Tell him thank you.
Tomorrow.
I agree with you. Making sure that we keep those streets on the side and that issue that they put in about painting them and fixing them up, that did it for me. Okay?
Isn't it amazing what people can do sometimes?
Okay.
Yeah. No, it made
that
a big
did it for me. That's why I have to say something about it, because that was the issue.
Hey, I'm glad you did.
That I went, excuse me.
If everybody had in the center, we wouldn't have got that problem.
Right. Okay. Yeah, there's your thing.